about that. My theory is always, it's probably not scientifically based whatsoever, but my theory has always been that the things that are really hard to catch, those are the ones that are like better for you.
And tastier?
Tastier, better for you, you know. It's like fish. Fish are fucking really hard to catch.
Yeah.
They're really good for you, you know.
Yeah.
Deer, really hard to catch, really good for you. That's big, fat, like those Japanese fucking, what are those, what do they call those? Kobe beef cows?
Yeah.
Those fucking cows, they're not running from anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's why it's terrible for you.
Terrible.
But delicious.
Tasty. Good, yeah.
We're such assholes. We've tricked animals to get like so obese that they're like on the verge of death because they're just packing fat everywhere in all their muscle tissue.
So delicious. What about foie gras?
Foie gras
is amazing. We're going to stop having that in California.
We're done, dude.
June. That's they're so stupid.
So lame, man.
Birds are cunts, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
100%
you.
Of all birds that have ever lived are cunts.
The cunt birds
don't give a fuck about you.
They really don't.
No birds care about you. They don't even care about they don't care about shit. They look cute when they have little babies and they're swimming together. But the reality is, you're going to eat them anyway. Why is it okay to eat them? It's not okay to overfeed them. It's a really quick process. I've watched them do it.
Really?
It literally only takes a couple seconds.
Yeah, with the tube?
Yeah, they take the goose, they put the tube into its mouth, they hold it there, and then they pour the grain down its stomach. Mm-hmm. It's not in pain. It only takes a couple seconds. And then after that's over, the thing's just running around. I mean, it's like, how is that bad, but the way they farm pigs, that's okay?
Yeah.
Chicken. You know
that's
what?
Legal.
Disgusting.
You know why, though?
It's incredible.
It's a winnable topic for animal people because the people that are in, like, because foie gras is like a kind of, it's a delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not considered something that, it's not like they're saying, we're going to try to take steaks out of the market.
Right.
You know? It's something that is, it's for,
it's elitist.
It's an elitist food choice. Most people don't eat any, I mean, the great majority of people don't even know what foie gras is.
Yeah.
So they go, this is a totally inhumane way to make this. They put it on a ballot and they get enough momentum behind it where they can win it.
Yeah, it's stupid. I've seen the argument, and you know, I'm certainly not one for animal cruelty, but it's not, you know, it might be bad if it was a person that you were doing that to. Yeah, absolutely. But you would never allow any of the shit they do to chickens for a human. No humans are allowed to live like that, stacked on top of each other in their own shit. You know, I mean, the way they're doing chickens and pigs with these fucking cages where they can't even move and veal. Well, that's all okay. That's all okay. But
that's
this,
not winning.
Right.
This cunty duck.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you can't.
Fuck that cunty duck. Stuff that fucking grain right down its stupid mouth.
I'm getting.
Give me your delicious liver.
I'm getting a gun just to shoot these birds outside of our window.
There's beautiful birds that they're building a nest. On our house, and they chirp every morning, and I wake up to this wonderful bird song,
and it
enrages my husband.
Oh, does it?
And he's like, "Let's get the gun."
It drives you crazy.
Oh, I think it's beautiful. I love the I love hearing birds chirp, but I have crows, and those are cunts.
Those are evil those are
birds. You just hear. Them.
I don't hate bird chirping. I don't like it at the hour
sometimes.
One time I left a steak. I had a steak and I forgot to defrost it. And I figured, well, probably the best way to defrost it is like to sit it outside in the sun.
Oof.
Right? I'm like, that's a good idea. So I put it on a plate. And with the wrapping on, this fucking cunty crow was coming down there and pecking at my steak.
No shit.
Yeah, he ate like a little chunk of it before I figured out what he was doing.
That piece of shit.
I mean, I had only turned my back for like a minute. That asshole is watching. They watch what you're doing.
Yeah.
They look to see if there's anything that you're doing that that could benefit them.
You're right. The birds don't really like you, man. Birds
they're cunts.
Mm-hmm.
You ever had a pet bird?
Yes.
Shittiest pet of all time.
It's a one-way relationship.
It's moody. It's in a mood to fucking...
And they shit on you constantly. If you pet, you let them on your shoulder, they take a shit on you.
Yeah.
They fly around the house and they shit everywhere.
Oh, fuck that.
It's the worst.
They're dinosaurs. They really are the last of the dinosaurs.
Bunnies are bad pets too, I always thought, because they just shit all the time. But
Eddie
then
Bravo.
Lately, with Eddie and a couple of the people, I'm like, wow, these seem like
Eddie
maybe
loves,
good pets.
Are they smart bunnies. Rabbits? Not
they're,
really.
They're really affectionate. You know, they just want to cuddle with you and you pet them and they just snuggle up with you.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. They're sweet. They're sweet little, but they're also delicious. And when push comes to shove, the apocalypse is coming. They got to go.
Yeah, I've had a rabbit before.
I like that too. I like rabbit.
You do?
Yeah, I had it at a Moroccan restaurant in the valley once. That's good.
I don't like
you can season anything.
You know what?
And eat it.
It's
if you're
gamey.
Well, we had in our old
I
neighborhood.
It was pretty delicious.
When we lived in the Rampart Division, one of our neighbors had a rooster.
Yeah, our next door neighbor.
She called Animal Protection Service.
Well, the fucking thing was crowing all at 4 in the morning. You hear
every
it.
Single
Who
day.
Who the fuck would allow you to have a rooster? That's an asshole pet to have.
That is a real
That's
asshole.
An asshole
on a chain. It was on a chain and
Jesus
stuff.
Yeah, man. Christ.
It would run through the streets and everything. Remember that?
Fucking
wow.
What a great neighborhood.
What was this lady? What?
This was an El Salvadorian neighborhood.
So she's from El Salvador?
I think it was a family. Because we could see it off our balcony down.
Was it an apartment building or a house?
It was an apartment.
Apartments.
Yeah, apartments.
So they thought they could have a goddamn rooster in an apartment.
Oh, yeah. For sure, yeah.
How nutty is that?
And there was a lot of neighbors who had to be losing their fucking minds like we were.
Oh, my God.
We were the ones that, ridiculous. Call somebody for this shit, man.
How the fuck does this crazy bitch think she's going to get away with having a rooster in her backyard?
Because the neighborhood is 100% El Salvadorian.
And they're just cool with that?
I think so.
That's crazy.
Because they're this is just like the village back home.
That's right.
Like, it's no different. You
and no snitching. You're not supposed to snitch on your neighbors. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, well.
So they just want... They want to get out of El Salvador, but they want to be like El Salvador.
For sure. The whole neighborhood is completely like that.
Turn it into the old country.
What is it? Yeah, I guess it's just...
Yeah, they had a lot of gunshots,
this
too,
is a
just like
version.
El Salvador.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Nightly.
Yeah.
That was
really?
A good neighborhood, yeah.
You used to hear gunshots nightly.
Was that time
daily,
you
sometimes.
Oh, my God.
Remember you were in the
dude.
Living room doing you know what?
Yeah, I was jerking off in the living room one time.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
And a bullet came through the window?
No, but it was like 2 in the afternoon, and I'm like... Like, just sitting on the couch, dick in my hand, laptop open, and I hear a fucking gunshot, but it sounds like somebody's on the balcony. Like, you know, when it's not like a distant, it's 2 in the afternoon, like, sun's out, and you hear, bang, you know, and you're like, whoa, like, jump. Right. I threw the laptop and jump on the floor.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, just dick out, like, you know. And I call Jose, the guy, the building manager, and I go, dude, did you hear that? And he goes, hear what? And I'm like, the gunshot? Did you hear that? He goes, nah, I'm in the garage. I didn't hear nothing. And I go, all right, man. I thought I heard a gunshot really loudly. And he was like, I didn't hear anything. I hang up the phone, and like 2 minutes later, the phone rings. He's like, hey, Tom, it's Jose. Yeah, some guy just got killed out on 6th Street. And I'm like, oh, so that's what that was. It was all blocked off. Some guy had gone up to a guy on 6th Street, like 2 in the afternoon, shot him with a .357 right in the chest, one shot, and then, like, put his hands up, got arrested.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that was middle of the day.
Yeah, some people don't like each other. There's a lot of people that don't get along.
It's a hateful world.
What a terrible way to be able to end it, too. You can't just get away from that person. You gotta put holes in them.
And to die on shitty 6th Street.
Ah, it's the worst.
In this shit neighborhood.
You know what's shit about that neighborhood is that we had the ice cream truck that would come and park right in front of the house and then in the same loop.
But it wasn't even the traditional. It had like a little El Salvadorian flavor to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some extra horns and whistles in it. Yeah. It was on a fucking...
And remember the swap meet on like Alvarado?
Oh, dude.
Did you guys feel really
so
uncomfortable
crazy.
Living in this neighborhood?
It was the worst decision. It was my fault because I was living in Silver Lake and I went on vacation. I came back and my house had been infested with rats. Okay?
Whoa.
There's rat shit everywhere. I had a grapefruit I had left out. It was half eaten.
Whoa.
And I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here, man. So this is the first place I could find, like the quickest place I could find. And it was relatively safe, but it was a 2-year disaster.
Wow, so, 2 years?
Why
2?
Lazy, broke sometimes.
Broke mostly,
you know, it was cheap. It was just... I don't know. I got used to it. And then we were like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
And the other thing was every night, we also were a block. I don't know if you remember at this point, it would be almost 2 years ago on 6th Street, just a couple blocks from where we were, is where this El Salvadorian guy was crossing the street drunk and he pulled out a knife. He was wheeling around and the cops shot him like 13 or 14 times. Right.
Whoa.
So they killed him. And then the whole neighborhood rioted and they walked up to the Rampart Division police station. There was riots on the streets.
Yeah, helicopters
and
everywhere.
We got on the roof of our building and there was like, because it was nightly that we would see helicopters. Like we would get the light would shine through our window like every night. But this night there was, we counted like 11 and they were just in a swarm above us, like a swarm of bees. Yeah. Just during the riot thing. And that's when we were,
that was the last couple weeks, we were like,
all right, we're definitely going to move. Yeah. Done with this shit, man.
Wow.
Yeah, this is too crazy. So we left that neighborhood.
Jesus Christ.
But there was a lot of gang fights. 18th Street gang.
We were right in between
MS-13.
Them.
Yeah.
And they would tag on our wall, like our building wall.
I have a buddy who lives in Venice and on the corner where his daughter plays in the little playground area. 3 kids got shot.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Like, you know, one day you're there and someone pulls out a gun. You know, that can happen. People yeah. die in a crossfire. Shit happens.
Yeah, it's devastating. Like, that's
a, what a crazy-ass neighborhood to live in.
Dude.
Venice what? Apparently has a lot of that, huh?
Fucking Burbank.
Yeah.
I got robbed by a wizard.
That's right. Right.
You know what happened when I lived in the Valley one time? My neighbor got murdered.
Oh, yeah.
And he got murdered in the front yard at night. Shotgun shot 7 times.
Oh, my God.
Which means they, like, reloaded.
Seven. Oh, my God.
And, I was the only one that didn't hear it. Like, everybody.
How loud do you snore, dude?
I know, dude. Because I was in a deep sleep. And I remember my buddy Chuck came over me and he puts his hand on my chest. He's like, Tommy. And I was like, holy shit, man. And he goes, did you hear that shit? And I'm like, clearly not. No, I was just fucking asleep when you yelled at me. And he was like, there was a lot of shots right there. And this wasn't a bad neighborhood, really.
Wow. So it was just someone really hated someone.
Well, it turns out kind of came out that he was dealing. Like, I guess he was dealing some pretty. You know, major weight. So this was like a retaliation. It was something
drug related. Yeah.
But they never got the guys that got him.
Wow.
They blasted him on his front fucking yard.
And they never got the guys that got him. Mm. Holy shit. I wonder how much they actually catch as far as like murders go.
You know what I think about a lot when you walk around, when you hear the percentage of unsolved homicides?
Mm-hmm.
How many times a day you cross paths with like a murderer?
Oh, I'm convinced everybody's crazy. A lot. Yeah. I don't trust anybody.
They say that the one way that's like the most difficult to catch someone is if they just do something random, like walk in somewhere, shoot someone and kill them, and then leave. Like those are really. I mean, that's why everyone's pushing for surveillance and surveillance.
That's the best way to catch people.
The best way to get away with it.
Oh, get away with
just
it.
Oh, random, yeah, random, not killings. Premeditated.
Not like
at all.
Someone who you obviously have already been pissed off at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say when the random ones happen. It's not much they can do.
There's still a high percent. Like, there's a high percentage of unsolved murders, man. There's so many, like, cases where there's like, we just didn't get it. That guy got away with it.
Yeah.
You don't have the evidence. Or sometimes, a lot of times now, it's these understaffed, you know, like, at least in the U.S., understaffed police departments. Mm-hmm. They have too many murders for how many cops they can put on to solve crimes, you know?
Right.
If your murder rate keeps going up, you go to, like, you seen the murder rate in, like, Venezuela?
No.
What it is?
No. No, holy thanks.
Holy shit, dude. Like, Caracas, Venezuela has... Oh, like, I think our murder capital always fluctuates between, like,
Baltimore.
New Orleans, Baltimore, Detroit. You know, sometimes... It used to be, like, L.A., New York. Miami gets in there. You know, you're talking about in the 200 to 400 kind of fluctuation of murders. And you take a city like Caracas, Venezuela, has over 1,000.
Wow.
So you're talking about over 4 times the murders that happen in New Orleans. And then you think about how many people you need.
It's a numbers game.
Jesus Christ.
To solve, though, that many murders. Like, you just show up and you're just like,
insane.
We got 27 on the other side of town. I don't know if we're going to get to this.
They don't give a shit about you in Venezuela either.
Probably not. A lot of Mexican cities have ridiculously high. Like, Monterey has really high fucking murder rate, man. Like, unsolvable. It's not solvable.
Wow. It's just a part of life. Murder's just a part of life.
Yeah, you're not going to get to it all.
Wow.
Too many other things.
That sucks.
It's crazy that that's going on in 2012, you know, because we have this sort of distorted perception of safety.
Oh, it's illusory. You know? I don't trust when people are like strangers. Like, this week I was in Cleveland, and the manager of the club was like, oh, let me take you to the market in Cleveland. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know you. I texted Bert. Yeah, I texted Bert. I'm like, is this guy on the level? Like, I don't trust anybody.
Yeah, you're right. You're right to not.
Yeah, but then
you never know.
You asked me, like, is he going to kill me? Is he going to kidnap me? And
Jesus Christ.
I don't think so.
Well, I grew up in L.A., man.
Yeah.
I'm street savvy. I don't leave windows open at night.
Yeah. Yeah, she's real.
I don't trust anybody.
That. Big city people have that fear more.
You should be. Yeah, if you grew up in L.A. Yeah,
well, you grew up with a lot of Night Stalkers.
You remember the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez?
Yeah.
As a child, you couldn't sleep with your window open because that guy was going to come in and steal you and like
stab
you.
What would your dad say? Fuck that.
Oh, my dad doesn't give a fuck. My dad's Hungarian. Like, he's like, I don't give a fuck. Fuck Richard Ramirez. I kill that cocksucker if he comes. I was like, all right, man. Yeah. But he liked to listen to the police scanner too. My dad and like. Figure out what crime was going on.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Ramirez was a scary guy. You know, a lot of women try to marry that dude.
He's married.
Yeah.
He's married now.
He's married?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I hope that shit works out.
Yeah. That's a terrifying dude.
Yeah, he did some horrible things to people.
He was caught by citizens. That's the craziest
street justice.
Thing.
How did he catch him?
He was leaving the scene. He had tried to murder somebody, or he did murder one of the people, and he was getting to
was
his
it
car.
Simi Valley, I want
yeah,
to say.
And people tackled him. He was tackled by everyday people.
Whoa!
Because his picture was all over the news at that point. Like this was like the height of.
Can you imagine how horrifying that would feel to see that guy in your neighborhood after his picture had been all over the news, and there he is right there.
Yeah,
coming from the scene of a murder.
That wound down and held him down.
Why didn't they beat him to death?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question.
I haven't read the story in a while, but
I'm pretty sure I would have beat him to death. I don't even think I would have thought twice about it.
Probably.
He's got a
gun in his hand, too.
I would have beat that guy to death, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think you get in trouble for it, right?
I don't care.
If it's a real piece of shit like that?
I would say I would have lost my mind. I went temporary insanity.
Yeah. Crime of passion.
Yeah, and I would. I would go temporary insane. Could you imagine if he killed somebody you know, or you were worried he was going to kill somebody you know? Like you were thinking about him killing your mom or something like that?
Yeah.
You know how fucking crazy you can get?
Have you ever thought somebody was going to kill you at any point in your life?
Yes.
No. You? Yes, really?
There's like a time when I was like a stupid teenager and I was high and I take a ride with someone and you're like, I'm going to fucking die. You know.
Well.
Or somebody that was driving me was on acid. When I was like a teenager.
At serial killers, that's the creepiest thing ever. The creepiest thing ever is people that just decide they get a kick out of killing people.
Oh, yeah.
And so they go look to try to find people to kill.
Get a rush
and
out of
you could just be in the wrong place at the wrong time and run into one of those motherfuckers. And that's, you know.
I know.
And there's no, you know, there's no like rationale to like why they want to kill certain people. They just have a thing for certain people.
Ted Bundy didn't like brunettes because some brunette broke his heart.
Yeah.
So all the girls he got were brunettes, yeah.
You know, I have met a lot of dudes that I don't think were serial killers, but I think developed a hate for women, like a real hate over years and years of rejection.
Yeah.
Their egos can't handle it, and they decide that there's something wrong with that person because they're constantly associating that person with negative feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they always associate women with being rejected,
mm-hmm.
with being humiliated, with being mocked and laughed at, and so they associate them with pain, and their meager brains just aren't able to realize that that's just a person. That person doesn't owe you shit, and you're really not that attractive, and why would she want to fuck you, you asshole? You know, just think about what you're offering her. You know, I don't know how you could fix that, but that's what you need to concentrate on instead of concentrating on what people like. You know, getting angry at people for not liking you. That gets to be a weird thing.
It morphs into a bigger thing too because they get to sit on it and think about it. So it becomes like a bigger picture thing for them. They're like all women.
Yeah,
I've felt that before. I've walked into like radio stations, and the assumption is maybe they've seen photographs of me, and they're like, "Oh, she's gonna be a cunty blonde." And I sometimes sense it. Like the assumption is that I'll be a dick to them, and I'm like, "No way!" Like I'm not saying that I'm like the hottest, but you know, I think the assumption is if you're a somewhat attractive girl, you're gonna be a douchebag. I know Ari didn't
really
like girls. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
this
what
podcast.
You mean Ari doesn't like girls?
Ari Shaffir. He and I did a podcast. He came over and I just sense that he has that thing with some girls where he thinks that, like, we hate him. But
well,
we
guys talked about
it.
No,
we hashed it out.
Ari's not a handsome fella.
No, but he gets really
badass.
Attractive girls.
Of course
though.
He does. He's a badass comedian. But he's that's his look is odd, you know. He's getting that you're going to have to deal with a certain amount of rejection.
Yeah.
I think he's beautiful.
But I mean, he's cool.
So but what do you mean, though, that he doesn't, he's like, do you really think that that's what it was, that he doesn't like women?
Yeah, I think that he did
so
have...
So it's from rejection.
Yes, absolutely. Because he's had his heart smashed, I think, by some good-looking broads.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when he came over,
also,
I asked him that.
You know, it's based on how many women are you interacting with and where are you at in your life while you're interacting with them. You know, it's sometimes the relationship means more than it should to you because you don't have a whole lot of shit going on outside of it. You know, and so you know what I mean? Like, my feelings on relationships are always, if someone doesn't want to be with me anymore, I don't want them to be with me, you know? And that's cool in the gang, and, you know, good luck with whatever you're on to. Yeah.
But what did Ari say, though?
Oh, no, because I brought it up. I was like, I have this, I feel this unspoken animosity that you have towards me, like, over the years. Because and I thought, you know, maybe I'm projecting, maybe that's my bullshit that I'm projecting on him. And I was like, I just sense you don't like girls, like you hate women. And he's like, you know, maybe a little bit. You're right, because I came up at the Comedy Store and I was rolling with those boys. I mean, So I think he had a little bit of the comedy store.
He was rolling with those boys.
Like David, us? Like those, not you.
Oh, Dave
like,
Taylor.
Yeah, like those boys, they're kind of shitty. And I think the assumption he had is that if you're a cute girl, that you get ahead in comedy faster, which I don't know if it's true.
Maybe they do. So what?
Yeah.
It's so just, what? It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you recognize it. And you know what? Real quality will always shine anyway. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if someone's if someone's getting through just because they're cute, their quality of their work is going to be exposed.
Well, yeah, you can't go forever. Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It's not going to last.
Yeah, what's good is good. And if someone gets a little advantage because they're hot, good for them. They got a lucky break.
Look at that. And since when is show business a meritocracy for one fucking thing?
Exactly. That's all hater bullshit. That's all that is. Yeah. All that stuff is just hater bullshit, worrying about other people getting ahead. It's so dumb. It's the dumbest stuff that comedians and entertainers and I'm sure folks in all sorts of walks of life entertain it themselves with. They let their mind go into these unfixable little circles where you look at someone else's success as somehow or another that's like bad for you.
Right.
Yeah, like it hurt you. You know, it makes you feel like inadequate or whatever. You know, you should look at that, whatever it is, and use all that shit and be inspired. That's what you should do. You should say, this is a, even if someone you fucking hate is doing well, you should say, whoa, all right, this makes me want to work hard. This makes me want to push. This makes me want to get ahead. Use it. Use it as inspiration. But don't ever let yourself get to that, who the fuck, these fucking guys, you know, fucking sucks, what about me? Can't get to that state of mind because that's a negative, just a shit, sloshy, no progress, wishy-washy state of mind. It's a bitch state of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've all done it. I did it when I first started out, you know, when we're doing, I was too competitive. You know, like getting involved in like open mic nights, like everyone was like competitive about like who did well, who didn't. And it was just a part. We didn't know what the fuck we were doing. You know, we're open micers. We don't know what we're doing. But I think there's a little something to, you know, to being competitive with like your peers. But it should never be negative. You got to keep it from being something where it's like a consuming thing where like it's when I see people and I've seen it like firsthand, like recently comics that were talking about a comic that was successful and they were talking shit about him and I was listening to them talking shit about him and I can see the didn't matter what they were saying. They were basically you know, it's that state.
Right.
It's that state that it doesn't matter what words are coming out.
Right.
That's a shitty state of mind. You know, and you can't say if the guy's doing well, that means someone's liking him. All right. And you might, you know, not like certain aspects of his work. But does it really bug you that much? Or is what's really bugging you the fact that this guy is doing something?
Or that you're not doing enough with your own
life. Exactly.
And that's usually what it is. When you're like, why is that person? Something's wrong with you, man.
Yeah.
Your head's not right.
Judging them on what, you know, I mean, look, there's going to be stuff you like and stuff you don't like. There's always going to be that. You know, like, I went to see that Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, you loved it.
Loved it.
I knew you would love it.
Stupid as fuck. Ridiculous movie. Had a great
Eddie Bravo's movies. Like what he says about movies. Yeah. Sometimes I'm on board, but most of the time I'm like really surprised.
Yo, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 91%.
Yeah.
Okay.
91?
Yeah, and Eddie's like, it's the worst fucking movie ever. Oh my God, I enjoyed the shit out of that
movie.
And
then he describes it and it was like fucking porn coming out of his mouth slowly.
Yeah, but Brian's like, dude, this might be your favorite movie. Dude, there's even werewolves in this movie.
I know.
People got jacked by werewolves.
What is it? That's why I left. That's why I went to the bathroom.
Movie or is it like a
it's a crazy hybrid weird fucking movie. It's kind of silly. Like it's almost
a fun
like
movie, right?
Yes, but there's almost aspects of it where you could consider it a comedy. Like I see what Eddie was saying. It was totally over the top, but really fucking fun. Really fun. Stupid ass fucking horror movie with a massive twist. The twist I won't get into.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the shit out of it. I enjoyed
That's
the shit
all
out
about,
of it.
Man.
Yeah,
man, I'm not in the movies to like have it mimic real life and have things be completely random and unpredictable. I guess what? I have a real life.
Yeah.
Okay?
Life's hard enough.
Yeah. I'll go to the movies. I want to see monsters. Okay?
Yeah.
I want to see explosions and aliens and
you know what,
UFOs.
Are fucking bummer movies when you see the trailer.
Yeah, not
fuck
to
a
it.
Bummer
man.
Movie.
No. Fuck
What's
you.
That one we were like, no. First of all, I don't want to see that silent movie. What's that one?
That movie can suck it.
No thanks. That movie can suck it. We invented sound for a reason.
Duncan was like, you gotta see it.
It's great art, man.
I don't need
Aleister Crowley, man. Freak you out.
I don't need any more art.
I don't know. Was it
like
the House
AIDS
of Sand
and
Fog?
Shit. Yeah, it's always
and it was like
then
what is it?
The House of Sand and Fog.
Whatever.
And it's like cancer, and then they shot my son.
Oh, fuck you.
And they're like,
no.
The movie's amazing. And I'm like, no, it's not amazing.
No, it's not. I'm not into getting bummed out. This is supposed to be entertainment for me. These motherfuckers take themselves so seriously. And just because you can depict something depressing and it depresses me, it doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
Okay?
Please.
It means you did a really good job of making something fucking depressing.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Imagine if
comedy had so much leeway, if we could make depressing stand-up. I guess a lot of stand-up would be kind of depressing.
Wow. It would be the most depressing shit in the world. If comics just were like, I'm going to share
if
this
If we told
stuff.
The truth, you'd be like,
I'm
going to
share
punchlines?
This stuff. With no jokes, ready?
Oh my
God.
Childhood shit. That negative shit you're talking about, where like comics going like "fuck that." You know where you see that a lot is when you do the road and you run into other comics on the road who are, and a lot of times they'll start with like, "I used to live in L.A." And you're like, "Oh yeah,
yeah I used."
And they're like, "Fuck that place, man." And you're like, "Here it goes. All right, open up." And then they do the whole like. You know, it's all bullshit, and I just realized, like, it doesn't even matter if you're any good at it. I'm like, I think it does matter if you're good at it. I think that helps a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, they give you the whole speech of, like, it's all shit, and that's why I left. I used to do it, but now I like it here in fucking
Podunk, Iowa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like,
yeah.
Good, man. I think you're going to run shit in this town in no time, so just stay here.
The worst is then, as the night goes on, he starts drinking and gets even more bitter.
Yeah.
And towards the end, the LA guy's here.
Yeah.
We should let him talk. He's the LA guy.
When I moved out here, my uncle goes, I used to live in LA. I hated it. And I was like, oh. And like, so like, and when he said goodbye, he was just like, yeah, by the way, I used to live there. It fucking sucks. That was his first goodbye message to me.
Wow.
Positive
I love
energy.
When people tell me that they
what
hate
a good
LA.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
Yeah, you hate
LA.
You've never even been
LA,
to LA.
I'm like, that's cool, man. I love it there. Like,
but
I enjoy myself.
It's people that have never even been here.
LA has a lot of bullshit attached
to it. Of course.
But it's got a lot of great stuff, too.
I love my neighborhood. I love.
There's a lot of great stuff in LA about the comedy clubs. I mean, where is it that you have a city that has, like, Pasadena Ice House is only 20 minutes away. Okay. You got right there on Melrose, you got the Improv, one of the greatest clubs in the country. You got the Laugh Stop, or the Laugh Factory, rather, and the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
All in one.
And
then
you got Hermosa.
Yeah, and you got Hermosa Comedy and Magic Club. That's another. That's
pretty fucking
by the
dangerous, though.
It's amazing,
in general, though.
Dangerous. What?
LA is pretty fuck. No, LA in general.
Oh,
in
what way?
Just, you know, besides the gangs and all that crap, but just the fact that there's a lot of drugs out here. There's a lot of fucking fast cars. There's a lot of people making bad decisions out here. It just seems like. Everything.
He's seven. He doesn't
Brian
know that
movie.
He can drive.
I see it all the time, though. Like, I see, like, I'll be on Sunset at 3 a.m. and suddenly, like, a Ferrari goes down the street going, like, 200. And you're like, really? You just blew, like three red lights right there. That's crazy.
This is one of your focuses for the shitty part of the city. All these fast fucking cars, man. They're just driving around.
Well, I mean,
so
the real
fast.
Problem with the city is Lamborghinis.
Well, I'm just saying in general that there is, it's not like normal. The people out here are in the entertainment business. They're in a certain kind of field of jobs.
It's a different speed,
and
man.
So it's a lot of different thinking than, say, a normal city where you have a little bit of everything. You know, you have a little bit of people that are bankers, farmers, you know, like a more, it's definitely crazy. I mean, I see shit all the time that I'm like, if my mom saw that would be crazy. If my mom just saw that,
I agree with you to a certain extent, but it's also the circles you run in.
Yeah,
I mean, you're running around going to these crazy parties and hanging out with these weird people. Like,
you're robbed at a karaoke bar across the street from NBC.
Wow.
In Burbank.
That's odd, but
that
that's
can
an
happen
anomaly.
Though. But you know, whenever there's a bar, it's that you run into the possibility that someone might try to rob people coming out of the bar. Because people are drunk, and when drunk people come out of a bar and you rob them, like, what the fuck are the cops going to do about that? You know, the cops are going to, what is your perception going to be like? What is the story going to be like? Do you really remember what the guy looked like? You know what I mean? If you're hammered,
right. The
cops are talking, and you're like, I think the guy fucking pulled a gun on me. Where's my money? Where's my money, man? The cop's going to be like, all right, sir. Okay, you say he was black?
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, come on, good luck with that. That's the perfect guy to rob. So it might not have necessarily been, you know, that Burbank is dangerous. It might have been somebody targeted that bar. People do shit like
that. You are right, though, that like when you're on the road, especially like if you spend like 4 or 5 days, you go out kind of more the third and fourth day, and you're like, this is a different speed, like a smaller city, you know? And
most definitely.
This is way different.
Yeah, so. Well, when I lived in Colorado and then I came back to here, I noticed a huge difference in the way people drive. Mm-hmm. You know, people drive 50% faster here. Everywhere.
Yeah, those fast cars, man.
Yeah. It's they cut a lot of people off, and they don't use blinkers as much, and it's like way less courteous.
Okay. I still feel like South Florida holds the trophy on that one.
Oh,
that
for country.
An asshole
Holy
driving.
Holy shit. Yeah. There's nothing like it.
Yeah,
you can feel it as you go down 95. Mm. It just, you hit Lauderdale, and then once you get to like northern Dade County, you're like,
they're animals.
Holy shit, man.
Dude, I did the Fort Lauderdale Improv this weekend.
Oh my gosh. Weekend.
What a fucking great club.
Yeah, it's a great club.
What a fun time. I guess I did it last night. No, night before last. What's today? Night before last.
Wednesday.
Miami's, I don't remember what day it is.
Yeah.
Fort Lauderdale was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's great crowds. It's a good room.
They're wild.
The
they're
energy
crazy
is just
people.
Like, wow. It's good.
Yeah. They're crazy people.
I feel like you have to turn it up.
That's how tired I am. I forgot about yesterday for a half a second.
I know.
Oh my God.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know, dude.
Lauderdale's nuts, man.
It's a wild place, man. They fucking party hard down there in Fort Lauderdale.
I think all of South Florida is all about, you know, you go down there and you realize that, like, if you go actually into Miami, that you can go to places that close at 5 and that open at like 5:30 a.m. for the after party, and it's not that rare.
So they clean up for a half hour and then,
or just, they just go to another place, and by the time you get there, that shit's open, and that's you know, you can party until noon.
Jeez, to break a dawn.
There's no other, like, what if
go on and on
to the break of dawn.
Yeah, you can fucking party.
Well, whatever. You get all kinds of crayons there in Miami.
Oh, Ryan.
Well, when I was in you know, Fort Lauderdale, I asked them, what time is the last call? And they said it's 5 a.m.
5 a.m.
And I'm like, that's because of cocaine. 100%, right?
Yeah. Sure.
That's for cocaine sure. Changed that law.
Yeah.
That shit doesn't make sense. Everywhere else is like 2. New York, it's like 4. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, no, 5.
5.
How about an extra hour to move product?
Yeah. Isn't that the city that cocaine built, though?
Well,
Miami,
you
got to
think,
right?
People are buying coke.
Yeah.
That's the hours they're going to be buying coke.
Yeah.
Those 2 to 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Just let's keep the party rolling, man. Yeah. Let's keep the party rolling.
It's not a 3 p.m. purchase.
When you no.
Yeah, you know, get back from the gym. Yeah, I should do a bump.
And that you think about it all rationally. I should do a bump. I should do some coke right now.
God.
So many people that did a lot of coke early on in their life, they have big problems when they get older.
Uh-huh.
With, like, their neurological system, like Richard Pryor had a big problem, and Mitzi, I don't know if she really did a lot of, I should probably not say, I don't know, that's rumor. I know a bunch of different people besides that have had like real serious issues with their body.
I always had a fear of that. Never had to worry about, I just had a fear of that, you know, sometimes the scare tactic works. Like when I saw they would be like, you know, you can do cocaine one time and get a heart attack. That somehow got into my brain when I was young enough where I was totally scared to try it.
It's just too expensive, man. Every time I did it, I used to be like, fuck, that was like a Nintendo game. You know, like that was a lot of money. That was half my paycheck. Yeah.
Is it that all? Do you do it?
Never done it.
No.
Scared of it.
Scared.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up and a lot of kids did crystal. That was like the big crystal meth.
Oh, yeah, we talked
about
this.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's so grody, but you know, you can always tell when someone was a tweaker. Like, I've had some ex-tweaker bosses who, like, they can't handle more than one thing at a time. Like, as they get out of it, what?
Nothing. Listen, I'm fascinated by the insight, the mind of a tweaker. It's really fast. So, when you're saying this, I'm really getting excited.
Yeah. So, okay, I used to work retail, like on Melrose, at some shitty clothing store. It was called No Problem.
That's when you're sneaking into Puerto Rican, right?
This was after the Puerto Rican guy, yeah. And I remember I had this boss who, like, if somebody came in the door and she had to ring somebody up at the register at the same time, it was like a total meltdown. Like, her brain couldn't process two things at once. And I know she was a tweaker in the past.
Wow.
Like, you can just see them, like, My stepsister's kind of like that too. She used to do meth, so she's all like, like they just get.
You can also sometimes tell by that face, that gaunt look, and the they always have the like some this, like there's like the some of the teeth have offset, you know, like they had some of them replaced, and it's like a look to them.
They're twitchy.
They picked it too many times. You see the scabs. And you're like,
there used to be this tweaker that used to hang around the pool hall that I used to go to. And I don't want to say her name because she might still be alive. And if she's still alive, she probably listens to this podcast. So let's just call her X.
Okay,
that's her name, X. And she was a
it's not my ex.
No, call her X. She wasn't anybody's ex. She was every – I mean, I never saw a single guy that was – I mean, she wasn't particularly ugly, but she was so cracked out.
Yeah.
All the time that it was just really odd to be around her. It's like you were around someone who was going through a dream. And she would like play pool by herself and like stare guys in the eyes, and she was crazy. And we all like she became like so, almost sort of family there. She was there so often that, you know, she would like sort of kind of hit on guys, but she was so crazy, like nobody wanted to have anything to do with her. I mean, she was completely insane. But she became like almost like our crackhead mascot that was there all the time. So and she would come in.
Throw chips at her.
Yeah, she would come in and play pool. And I even think she got a job cleaning up at one point in time. They gave her like some hours.
Did you guys used to take turns on her like when you got really drunk in the alley?
I don't. As crazy as pool hall people are, desperate, especially 24-hour gambling pool hall places, which this place was, nobody fucked her. Nobody, dude.
She was pretty bad.
It was bad. But she was a sweetheart of a person. I didn't ever communicate with her enough to go, hey, like, what are you doing? Like, what, you know, what's going on? What are you doing? Crank? You know, are you doing? What is it? You know, I never got to that conversation, but man, she would have these weird moments where she would like, you know, think maybe you and I could go to dinner. Something, maybe, you know, things ain't wrong with that. We don't just go to dinner.
And
I'm like, oh, I can't go to dinner. I have a girlfriend. I can't go to dinner with anybody else but her. Well, okay, no problem. And she would go over and like play pool and like stare at you. She was really like a character in a movie. Yeah, remember me and my friend Johnny B were sitting there, we were watching her once, and she was giving us like crazy googly eyes while she was knocking balls around the table. She would play pool for like 20 minutes at a time and then like bring the balls back. So while she's doing this, she's playing, doing googly eyes, and Johnny looks at me, and my friend Johnny was like this really streetwise kid. He goes, yo, dog. He goes, you put her in a movie and people would say it's too over the top. They go, you got to cut that character back. Yeah. Nobody's going to believe this character. Some fucking crazy bitch comes in all methed out and starts shooting balls around, giving people googly eyes. And she would put like a leg up in the air while she would make a shot, like, and try to be like a ballerina or something. She was completely cranked out. It was really fascinating because she wasn't that old, you know. She was like, I believe she was probably 30-ish, somewhere in her 30s.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Yeah, but it ages
completely
you.
Drugs, though, yeah.
It ages you in, like, dog ruin, years, that shit.
It seemed like there might have been some crazy mixed in with the drugs, too. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was a little bit of self-medicating going on.
I like that there's always, with that type of person, with a crazy and or drug person, there's a real line between, like, you being around them and being amused. And then backing off because you're kind of scared of them, you know. Even if they're not a scary, they're not like physically imposing.
Right.
You're like it's so big and so crazy what they do that it you have fear on some level of like how weird and crazy they get, you know.
Right.
So like if it's a little bit less, you're like, oh, this is funny. Like he's just kind of fucked up right now. But then it goes over that line. You're like, this is terrifying. You know, when they're like, hi, you know, and you're like, oh, this is too much.
Yeah, well, you wonder what their perception of reality is like, whether or not they can really control themselves.
Yeah, because that's somebody that could randomly kill somebody, usually. You know, if you get that fucked up and you know what's going on.
Yeah, if someone's fucking completely methed out, how much do they even know about what they're actually doing?
A lot of it, like, if you just watch Cops, you see that episode all the time where they're, like, in some la-la land. They would believe and do anything. They think Abraham Lincoln's chasing them, you know?
You stay up for days. Like, you don't sleep on meth.
Yeah.
And you hallucinate.
And meth isn't meth just kind of like a speed, right?
Yo, it's made of, like, battery acid and, like, sudafrin. Like, pre-cum. They stopped selling. Pre-cum. It's pre-cum. Crayons.
So rainbows. It gives you a speed effect, but it doesn't give you a visual effect, right?
Well, it gives you, it totally impairs your judgment on top of, like, spiking you through the roof.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you have, in your brain, you know, what stops you from doing certain things, your ability to make a judgment on, like, I shouldn't drive 150 down this road, you know, because of the dangers that apply, all that goes out. That's why they you know, you've seen, like, I Survived, the woman was, like, kidnapped, and these people that were methed out just stabbing her and, you know, cutting her slice. Then they came back and they hit her with a car, they set her on fire. And
oh, my God, she survived?
She survived. Yeah. And when they arrested them, you know, they were all tweaked out, and later on they were all, like, I didn't know that we did all that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That's crazy.
But that's why you should do cocaine instead.
Yeah.
It's a little better of a drug. It's a grown-up drug. Yeah, you know, if you can afford it, do coke.
It seems like some people just want to escape reality. I mean, you to be a person in this day and age that still wants to try meth for the first time, like, you must fucking hate your reality. Your reality must suck so bad that the idea of being horribly addicted to one of the worst drugs ever created doesn't even faze you.
Yeah.
Or heroin.
You're like, I'm going to try it. But at least heroin has came up with some... or been connected, rather, some great musicians, you know?
That's Kurt a good
Cobain,
point.
You know, yeah. I mean, Kurt Cobain, I had a discussion with some friends about Hendrix, because I always say that Hendrix did heroin, and they were always, no, it was acid, but it turns out he actually got arrested for heroin. He got arrested in Toronto for heroin.
Yeah.
So he definitely had some use of heroin.
There's definitely a correlation between heroin and good music.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that was his number one thing, but I mean, Hendrix obviously was really into acid as well, and obviously a fucking musical genius. There was just some shit that some dude can tune into that, you know, the average person can't, and he could just nail it, you know. I think he would have been fucking amazing if he did nothing.
Yeah,
if he just drank water and fucking grapefruits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, I don't, but heroin has influenced many a musician.
Velvet it's, Underground,
yeah, Lou Reed, right?
Yeah,
he had a song about heroin, right?
Yeah. That was hairy, scary to listen to, though.
I think it was a big part of a lot of musicians' experiences, because it's such a sensual type of experience. Like, the idea behind it is that it's so sensitive and raw, the experience of this blissful energy that the opiates provide.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you can embrace, like, the pure sound of music and see it. You know?
I can That'd see cool. the appeal more of getting in, like, the appeal being that, like, it's this great, you know, it's a great painkiller, it takes you to this la-la land.
Yeah.
Like, it's either you can romanticize that drug, but, like, to start crystal meth, be like, I want to eat rocks, man. I want to chew on rocks. Like, that's kind of like what you're saying you want to do, you know?
I guess I don't get drugs where, like, you have crazy energy, but it's unfocused energy. Because I think with meth, like, I don't know, can you do stuff? Like,
yeah, people do stuff.
Win the Nobel Prize on meth?
I don't know.
Can you make good music?
They'll do tasks.
I think what he said about judgment, I think your judgment is really involved in every single aspect of what you do. And when you're doing a drug that fucks your judgment,
Amy Winehouse.
What happened? What did he say?
No, I was just thinking, like, what, I mean, Hendrix could focus on heroin.
No, well, I don't think he was using heroin that much. Like, while he was more playing.
Acid.
Well, they said that one of the things he used to do is put acid in his headband. Yeah. So that when he had it on, his pores would open up while he was on stage. It would drip into his skin. And
wow.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an urban legend,
like a
though.
Hippie thing
it sounds
to say.
Like, yeah.
But you can't function on acid.
Sounds like someone really annoying would tell you. Yeah, but I don't know if that's true.
I could never
because,
function on acid.
Well, someone threw a no-hitter on acid.
That's right.
Who was that?
Oh, yeah.
Forget. Yeah.
I remember that. And he was like, I partied all day. Yeah. And then my friend was like, you got to play a game, man. And yeah, he had stayed up all night, acid. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think he was with the Pirates.
Doc Ellis.
Yeah.
Doc Ellis. Shit. Yes, that's
Pirates.
Funny.
Yeah. Doc Ellis. Yeah, he threw a no-hitter while on acid.
And now he's the parking lot guy at the comedy store.
Yeah. That story, they did a really good job of animating that online. They did
the Doc Ellis thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I did. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. What was that for?
Somebody, I think, so he told that story. I forget. I don't know who he told it to, but they did you know, an animation to the story that's awesome.
Wow.
Really good.
I could see how it could go right. Well, I've never done acid. I should say that right off
the bat.
I've only done the only psychedelics I've ever done are DMT, mushrooms, ecstasy, which isn't really a psychedelic, right?
Mm.
I've done the Amanita muscaria mushroom and the other kind, psilocybin, but no. No acid. And no one I've ever trusted had it.
Wow.
You know? It's always been like someone's, you know, if it came up, it was someone who just had this weird glint in their eye. And I was like, no.
No.
It's too complicated, and it's too illegal. It's really difficult to make. So if you're making it, like, you're out there on the fringes, son.
Yeah.
Some people just got busted recently. Some school somewhere. Some kids were producing acid, and they busted them.
I wouldn't do acid again. I've done it probably over 100 times.
Jesus. 100 times?
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
It was probably way over 100.
That's why you're 7.
It probably didn't help. It's something I don't want to do. Like, I can't believe I do mushrooms now. But now I never really considered mushrooms bad. But mushrooms
teach me shit, man. Every time I've done mushrooms, I just have a new revelation, a new insight in things.
The problem with acid is that it's too much of a commitment. It's like, where mushrooms intense. Is usually, yeah. like,
but you won't
4 to 5 hours. What's that?
You won't do mushrooms anymore?
No, I will. I just, lately, I'm just more scared of the mushrooms that have been going around. I think that they're not the right kind.
Have you done that over 100 times, kind. Too?
Yeah, I've probably done.
You're scared of the mushrooms that are going around?
Yeah.
Based on what?
It's just, I don't trust mushrooms as much as I trust...
Well, it's kind of the same, along the same lines. Like, where are you getting this from? You get this from someone willing to stick their neck out and sell something illegally,
you know,
which is often the case. But apparently there's some sort of a loophole, and truffles are not illegal. Like, you can get, like, psilocybin truffles. Hmm. Go Google that shit, folks. Don't listen to me. I don't want to be a purveyor of any...
I've never heard of truffles.
Schedule one information.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I think that Doc Ellis was taking other drugs in conjunction with just acid.
Holla.
Yeah, because I've taken a lot of acid, and I don't know. Like, I didn't even know where I was. Like,
yeah. There
are times you're like, where am I? In a convenience store? Where am I? In a convenience store? Where am I?
People
can't even know.
But people react differently on it, right? I mean, some people.
I don't know.
It's just
I wish
like
I
mushrooms
could know.
For the most part. Like, it's either it could be all visuals or it could be speedy.
Oh,
sometimes
I hate
that. You're just in.
Well, for pool players. There's always been two things: amphetamines, and if you can handle it, heroin. And the guys who would do heroin had no nerves. They had no nerves. They wouldn't feel any nervousness. So they'd gamble for like ridiculous amounts of money and just never miss. There was a dude. His name was Water Dog. That was his nickname, or Buffalo Bill, depending on who you name. And he would always come, and they would make a day. They would make a game. They'd figure out how much they were going to bet, and it was always a lot of money because he was like a top level local player. And then he would go to the bathroom, and he would shoot up, and he would come back, and he would sit on a stool, and he would sit on this bar stool like this, just like this. I mean, I'm not bullshitting. His hands like a T-Rex, and just sit there. For like a half an hour, just blasted on heroin. And then he would get off, and then he would screw his cue together, and he wouldn't miss a fucking ball. He was a monster.
Wow. Focus.
They played on this table. There's a gambling table that they had. And a regular pool table's pockets are 5 inches. They're like these big, sloppy, open pockets where you don't have to hit a ball absolutely perfectly. They had these under 4 inches. It was under 4. It was like 3 3/4 inches. It was fucking ridiculous. Like, the ball barely fit through the hole. And this motherfucker was just firing things in. He wouldn't miss. He couldn't miss. It was incredible. He wasn't nervous at all. They were betting thousands of dollars. It was like maybe $10,000, $10,000 each. It was a very high bet because the guy who was doing it with was a race car or was a horse jockey.
Mm.
One of the like the they had a different kinds of like carts, like horses would pull carts. What the fuck are those things?
Wagons.
Yeah, what I don't know. It's like a type of racing where like
the horse is actually
pulling like a cart behind it.
Right.
It's not just the horse running and the guy on top of it. And he was just a crazy gambler, and he would play this fucking guy, and he would get so bummed out because he knew the guy couldn't miss because he's on heroin. He's on the shit. That's what he said. Look at him, the motherfucker. He can't miss. He's on the shit. I would be complaining, but he wouldn't even care that he was complaining.
So
he just had a slack jaw look, and just the balls would just fire into the hole.
Would they get into the heroin because they knew it would help the nerves? Like, is that why they would even get into it?
They're degenerates.
Oh.
You know, who knows? You know, most of those guys, they were looking to party at all times. Like, pool players are some of the wildest human beings. People that have actually made a commitment to trying to make their entire living off of tricking people to gamble with them that don't play as good as them, and then betting all your money on that. Like those people are nuts.
Bowling poker.
Oh, they're nuts. I mean, there's a good percentage of them that are nuts. I mean, a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are like really cool and smart people that are just in love with pool, and that's all they want to do. The tournament guys, you know, the guys that travel from tournament to tournament, you know, even the best ones of them are the gamblers. The best tournament guys, the guys like this kid named Shane Van Boning, who's deaf, and when he plays, he shuts his hearing aid off.
Wow. Yeah,
and he goes into his own little world, and he doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't hear shit. He just plays.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it does everything on feel, no hearing, you know? It's kind of fascinating. The point where people have actually accused him of having an advantage.
Sure.
And one guy was playing him, this guy Earl Strickland, actually stuffed his ears with cotton and then put big, like those,
really?
Aviator headsets on.
What a dick.
Like someone who would
that is a dick move.
Work at the fucking towers.
Yeah.
The flight guys. Yeah. That's what he would wear. Yeah, and he would play pool with that on. It's hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah, there's
it
some
is.
Fucking characters.
You can't hear? Yeah, I can't hear either, asshole. Okay?
He's got these goddamn huge headphones on, man.
What a ridiculous asshole.
With stuffing in his ears. He's crazy. But he's brilliant. Brilliant and crazy at the same time.
Yeah.
These pool players, that's a nutty life. So, you know, when you ask who what came first, the heroin or the pool, it was all together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all at they're all hanging out at these 24-hour pool places. They were the most fun I had ever had as a kid growing up.
What city was this in that you were in?
White Plains, New York, Executive Billiards.
24 hours a day.
Well, we had the keys. My friend owned it. My friend Guy was the owner of the place. So we were always there. So Guy would like keep it open, and we would lock the door, and we would all play by ourselves. We had people in there gambling and playing by themselves late at night.
Wow.
It was just such a clubhouse. And I had, I don't want to say a cunty girlfriend, but she was a little on the negative side, and we had problems because of that. And she didn't mean to be. She's not a bad person at all. It's just sort of the way she grew up. You know, she had a hard life, and when we were interacting, if she would like bum me out, or if like I just couldn't wait to get the fuck away from her and get back to that pool hall where I knew some crazy shit was going on.
Yeah,
I knew there was two dudes who had they were gambling on roaches, see which roach could get to the corner first. You know, and it was like yelling, man, yo, you can't coach the roach, bro, you can't coach the roach. It was like everything was always fun. It was a bunch of men, and there was very little violence. In all the years that I was there, I saw like a couple like little minor little altercations, nothing serious at all. But it was always fun. You'd always go there, and it was a bunch of men who really didn't want to grow up.
Yeah.
You know, and my friend Max Eberly, who's a professional, he said that there was at one point in time in this country there was a bachelor class of men that never wanted to get married. They just didn't want to do it, and a lot of those guys would go to pool halls. And that's one of the reasons why pool halls got such a bad reputation, is that, you know, everybody else in his mind, and you know, Max is a really nice guy, he's a very easygoing guy, but in his mind he's like, why is there this desire to get people to enforce or to live some other form of life that he doesn't want to live? If he doesn't want to get married, he doesn't want to have children, why can't you just let him hang out at the pool hall?
Yeah.
But they would, you know, always be considered degenerates because of that desire.
Yeah.
You would always be assumed that if you wanted to be someplace where you're playing pool at 4 o'clock in the morning, terrible things were afoot.
Right.
You know, just
right.
Not usually they were right.
Doing actually bad things, so they're just playing pool.
Well, the reason is because the people that are willing to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning hanging out all night at this pool hall are the same people who are not going to listen to whatever anybody tells them to, and they're going to want to try to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And if whatever they want to do is just gamble all day, why stop them?
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're not robbing anybody, as long as they're not doing anything illegal. There was a shockingly small amount of criminals in all the time that I hung out at these pool halls. You'd think there's like way more criminals, way more crime. Very little.
Yeah, because of the late night and the boozing and the drugs.
No, it wasn't even that. It's like there wasn't really that many bad guys there. It was like
these guys all wanted to do what they wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah. It was all like, I remember there was this one dude. It was really fascinating. He learned how to play chess in his head in prison, and he could sit down with a chess board, and he could either tell you the moves, and he would watch your move, and he would never move a piece. He would just tell you what the moves are, or he could do it all in his head. Like you have a chessboard in your hand, I have a chessboard in my hand, and I say pawn to the step, and then you have to keep account of where all your pieces are while you're doing this.
That's
and you have to agree with the other person has to agree. Pawn is at this spot, right? You know, you have to, like, you can't.
Without actually.
Without no chessboard.
Wow.
No
chessboard. Gosh.
Yes. These guys are brilliant. See, this isn't a dumb guy.
No.
This is a guy that just didn't want to do certain things in life.
Oh, sure.
He was gambling once, and it was late at night. It was, like, after midnight. And he goes, he looked at his watch, then, and they, you know, they were going to play another set. And he goes, do you want to play another set? He goes, I've been thinking about getting a fucking divorce lately, so yes. Yes, I do. And he wound up getting a divorce. Like, he decided right there that he doesn't want anybody to tell him to come home after midnight.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and he's like, shut the fuck up. I want to play pool. I'm playing pool. Mm-hmm. You know, but he was a brilliant dude. There was a kid who was a local kid who was an actual chess champion, really young kid. And he was learning how to play pool. But at chess, he was like a super wizard. And him and this guy would sit in a corner and they would exchange back and forth. They would go over their moves together. It was amazing. Amazing to watch.
Yeah, it's incredible. Wow.
That'd be funny. They have like a little picnic blanket and they're both sitting there with like a little picnic basket, just like laying on their side, looking at each other, doing mind chess with each other. The wind slowly blows their
hair.
Crazy.
I'm sure there's couples that do that. They think it's sexy.
Yeah.
I think it's sexy. Sure.
But you said he learned that in prison?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew a lot of prisoners, or a lot of felons, rather. That I knew a lot of people. There was very little crime that I saw, but. I knew a lot of people who had done a lot of crime in the past.
Wow.
One dude, his name was International Sal. And International Sal, rest his soul, died a few years ago. And he, when he was younger, what he used to do is he was one of the first guys.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a gem of a human. He was a gem of a human. And for the first days of American Express cards, he figured out how to copy the American Express card from the papers that would, you know, that would be left behind when you would make a carbon slip.
Yeah.
The carbon slip. So they would make a complete copy of your card and then use it and buy things and run up.
Fantastic.
And
I love shit like that.
And he was a notorious gambling loser. He just could not win. Mm. And he would wait at the pool hall and they would come by and they would bring him thousands of dollars. And he would go and blow it all playing pool. Like the guy who I was talking about earlier, about the heroin guy, that's this guy, this is George the Greek. And George the Greek would always talk, the fucking guy can't win. The guy can't fucking win, I'm telling you. I don't give a fuck if it's an inch from the hole. You bet on the other cocksucker. You bet on... And he would always, you know, just sit there and analyze this International Sal character. And he goes, well, let me tell you something. This motherfucker, he lost $1 million a month. Lost $1 million a month. Whether that's true, who the fuck knows? Who the fuck knows how much he really lost? But apparently he lost an incredible amount of money playing pool. Oh. Yeah, and to people who, like, you know, just robbed him. They would just rob him constantly. So then he went to jail, and then he came back out and went legit. And when I met him, he was legit. So when I met him, it was all just the stories of International Sal. But it was fascinating. He would sit down and tell you what it was like.
International Sal.
Yeah.
He's
such a fucking degenerate name.
Yeah. You know what
I mean, it's for like a gambler or like a mobster or something.
Yeah.
I'm Cole Still Brian.
I got to speak to him like a couple of years before he died. I called up the pool hall once to say hi to everybody, and he was still alive. And I said hi to him. I used to like the guy. I used to like hanging out and talk to him, tell me old criminal stories. Because when I met him, he was already probably like in his 60s. He was probably already.
Yeah.
I met a lot of crazy motherfuckers in that place. Whenever you're in sort of an alternate environment like that, where the, you know.
Like comedy clubs?
Yeah, comedy clubs, exactly. Perfect example.
Derelict.
Parallel between people like that and comedy. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And
boxing gyms, too.
Yeah.
Anything where you're doing something that's like completely outside of the norm. Some of the funniest people I've ever met in my life have been fighters. Guys in fight gyms.
I bet.
Because they're so ridiculous. You know, first of all, a lot of them are fucked. Like Tate used to say some funny shit, man. He was always saying some pretty funny shit because he's a goddamn savage.
Yeah.
You know, he's a former mixed martial arts fighter, big fucking giant caveman, Viking dude.
Stinky farts.
Stinky.
Were they really? Was he the one that ate meat all the time?
Yeah, protein bars and shit.
Sure.
Yeah, no, he's a big dude. You gotta eat a lot.
Yeah.
The digestive tract can only handle so much protein.
Yeah.
It blows it out in the form of just toxic gas. But, you know, fighters have, like, a certain sense of humor that's, like, you know, much like comics do, like, where it's, like, that dark, they're willing to go where other people aren't willing to go sense of humor, you know, pointing out something that everybody might be thinking but not everybody saying.
And don't really think before they say it kind of shit.
Exactly. Very important. impulsive. Yeah. Very impulsive. It's, well, you have to almost be to try to do that in the first place, because it's such a crazy thing to decide to do with your body.
To, you know, put up with the physical torture of, yeah, it. To put yourself out there to get beaten.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that too, but there's, you know, the, just the impulsiveness of, you know, just getting involved in it. Some, for some people, it's actually a slow thing, and they, you know, slowly get into it and get into martial arts and eventually want to be a fighter. But some people just fucking right away want to fight. There's just a wild impulsiveness to them. I've seen cage fights where guys had like literally a week's training. They had never done anything, and they were fighting, and they had a week's training, and they just fucking go wild on each other and shit and swing and craziness, and no one really knew how to fight.
Jesus Christ.
So essentially a street fight with a few rules.
Remember that show we saw, was it Taboo, where there was a place in Australia where a guy has a circus tent. And he has like fighters, I like a row of fighters. On the, yeah.
Chronicles. Yes, you did.
Yeah,
yes.
Oh, okay.
No, please, somebody, please keep going.
Yeah, go, so you go into the circus tent in Australia, and the drunks and people off the street come in, and he sets you with one with a fighter, you know, and you can fight a professional fighter.
Yeah,
that's so dangerous.
And it's, but at the same time, kind of awesome and serves a function. Like if you're just some angry drunk 18-year-old boy who wants a fight, well, go over there instead of beating.
They up. Don't have like, it's not like a. A Cain Velasquez steps in. They're like, this dude might kill you.
Right.
It's not. It's like they're people that have, they're boxing.
Right.
They're boxers, and that are what they are. Is they're not championship level boxers.
But it's only boxing. There's no kicking or anything.
No. And it's just boxing. You throw on gloves, and if you throw somebody that knows how to box, just, you know, has a few years of boxing, knows how to move and jab and actually box, versus a guy who's like, I'm fucking crazy. And you're just like, here's gloves, go at it. That dude with the boxing skills is just going to
pick them
on
apart.
A clinic. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's what they do. And everyone's drinking. It's like a fun act. Right. They don't like.
But what if some guy's a ringer? What if there's some Kimbo Slice type character?
Yeah, oh, man. I don't
ready
know.
Ready to fucking knock that dude's
by the way,
off.
Somebody.
If anybody can get in, right?
Yeah. If you go to somebody the was tweeting me, they're like, we used to have those here. This is 2012, man. I'm like, dude, we just saw the show. It's not like some shit I'm talking about from the 60s. This is going on right now.
I fucking love Australia, dude.
It's awesome.
I love it. Tommy and I had a great time there.
It's great country. Nice people.
So fun.
So much
we fun. Talked about it. Was that the Ice House Chronicles too?
Yeah.
Tommy and I went, and we were there with Eddie Bravo, and we went to see that stupid Leonardo DiCaprio movie where
Shutter Island.
He was crazy, Shutter. Which a lot of people liked. And I was like,
I liked it. That fucking movie.
I love that movie.
What
that
is
movie
it
sucks.
What is
Inception.
It?
Shutter Island.
No.
Oh, Shutter Island. Oh, I love Shutter Island.
I don't
too.
Even know.
Of course, Inception, I thought,
and there
was pretty good.
You hold on throughout Shutter Island for the twist, and you're like, oh, so he is crazy? Like the thing that we kept considering the whole time?
Right.
Like, he's crazy. Maybe he's not crazy.
Right.
Maybe he's crazy. And then they go, yeah, he was crazy.
It just make sense to me that you're showing me this, you know, you're showing me from his perspective first and then from an outside perspective.
So much more from that movie. Yeah.
Well,
there's a better version of it, I guess.
Meanwhile, I'm like, Cabin in the Woods. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We didn't like it. Me and Eddie and Tom, we were all in agreement. This is like, it felt like we got tricked. It was a trick.
Absolutely.
Right? So we decided to get hammered. So we went to some local bar and just went crazy.
Yeah.
We went fucking crazy.
And we had just landed, so our body clocks were
we were a day off. Drunk.
And we just started buying drinks for everybody. There was like hundreds of people. I don't know how much. I literally spent thousands of dollars. I don't know how many people I bought drinks for.
That's awesome.
But I don't know what. I mean, we just had a couple of shots, and the idea came across to just fucking, I could buy drinks for everybody. Let me just buy a bunch of fucking people drinks. So I just started pointing to people. Do you want a drink, man?
Yeah,
dude, awesome. Give me a high five. What do you want?
You used to do that at the comedy store every weekend back in the day almost.
Well, I would buy the whole crowd a drink if I kicked somebody out. That was my move.
It happened almost every week.
Yeah, well, because there was always at least once a month you would get like a crazy heckler, like someone who you just couldn't deal with. You'd be like, come on, man, you can't keep talking while the show's going on. This shit is. It's annoying to all the other people around you, and they all start cheering, and they go like, bro, I want you to enjoy the show. I want you to enjoy the show. But you got to stop yelling shit out, okay? And then they'd yell shit out again. All right, fuck this. You got to go. And then when it got to that point, I'm like, I'm sorry, dude, but you got to go. And then when the people would leave, I would say, look, and that felt creepy, right? It felt like daddy came home and yelled at mommy.
Yeah,
I go, I don't want anything uncomfortable. So my custom is when I kick someone out, I buy everyone else a drink. And so everybody goes, yay. I go, I want us to have fun. I don't want to have to deal with that, yeah. But I have, it's my job. Unfortunately, when there's someone like that, you have to deal with them because it's interrupting the show for the other people. It's fucking with the performance and there's nothing you can do about it other than address it. You have to address it.
I think
it.
Some people don't consider that aspect of it the most too, is that a lot of times people think that that person's just bothering you,
mm-hmm.
and they're not even considering the fact that maybe in that section where that asshole keeps yelling shit out, there are 25 people around him who are like, I wish somebody would get rid of this motherfucker,
because
he's ruining my experience.
There was a couple of those in Florida. There was several kickouts in Florida. One of them was a cop.
What?
Yeah. Turns out the chick was outside, and they put her hands on her. She pulled a badge out on the guy.
Wow.
Yeah, she's like, get your hands off me. And this bitch was, she got kicked out for being hammered, and she was a cop. But there was several people that got kicked out. One of them was a table that wouldn't shut the fuck up, so the neighbor table slammed his hand on the table and said, shut the fuck up. And then the guy got up, and he was enormous. It was a huge mistake. I mean, the guy didn't do anything, but holy shit, what I'm talking about, this is like a, he looked like a football player, like a 300-pound football player. I was like, holy fuck, that guy's big.
Yeah.
And he's pointing down at them, and I'm like, oh, please, Lord, no, not a fucking bench clearing brawl. So I asked him, I said, sir, what's going on, sir? Can you tell me what's going on, sir? And I hear a lot of, fuck you, you fucking touch my table. So, and I'm like, sir, what happened? Were you enjoying the show before all this went happened? And this lady goes, before these fucking assholes had a slap down on our table. So they take her husband out, and I go, ma'am, I go, we're going to need you to calm down. Are you going to stay? You're going to stay, and they're going to arrest him? Is that what's going to go on? Like, what's going on now? They're just going to kick him out? And they just kicked him out, and then she said, you know, they were fucking slapping on my, and then the table goes, yeah, we slapped on your table because you wouldn't shut the fuck up, and everybody went, yeah,
That's
and
the
whole
best.
Place started cheering, you know, for this guy, and I'm like, wow, like, and I asked her, I go, have you ever done mushrooms? And then I go, you probably haven't done mushrooms, right? I go, because if you did, you'd feel terrible about this. You'd realize, like, you're just being real negative and selfish. And this is just creepy. You want to talk, and you're mad. I go, you should feel horrible that you were so talkative that people had to slap their hand on your table because you're interrupting their fun, their evening, their good time with your squawking. And then she gave me the finger, and I said, well, that's really bad karma right there. I go, what you're doing right here is
karma. I love it.
I'm like, you're spreading the wrong kind of energy. That's the wrong signal. It's not nice.
Yeah.
No.
But it was just one of those things where you just, you're going to run into a certain percentage of those people.
It's going to happen. Yeah. It's part of the
business. It's fun, though. It's part of what, look, not everybody got out of it. No one got hurt. Some people got drunk. People got kicked out. But at the end of the day, the rest of the audience had a great fucking time. That was one of the nuttiest shows ever, the one where the lady and the guy got kicked out.
Yeah, that's I've seen some wild ones, man. I saw a guy in the audience one time punch another guy.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've seen a brawl. I've seen a brawl or two.
But during your show?
Yeah.
Like in the showroom?
That's crazy. Yeah, I've seen it a couple times. I've seen guys get in fights. It's almost always someone talking.
I saw a guy, almost a guy always, that punched the guy. Punched him because they told him to shut up.
Oh, yeah, always. Yeah. Always.
Like, shut the fuck up, man. Will you stop talking?
I love that. I love the punk rockness of stand-up. Like, it's the only form of entertainment where the audience is allowed to take, first of all, like, eat nachos and drink and shit and then, like, yell at you. Like, what other, like, in the theater, like, if we were proper performers, that could never happen. Like, if we were just stage actors and shit, like, doing plays.
Right.
You can't yell at people.
No,
it's like,
not
it's
acceptable.
So bananas.
It's not acceptable.
Bananas.
To just...
Yeah, it's not.
I hate this play, man.
You're like, all right. I know, like, you would never.
Never.
Did you see the YouTube video of the guy who's doing this performance art piece in New York, and there was a big Christian contingent in the audience?
No.
You haven't seen this?
No.
I forget the dude's name. I should probably YouTube it or something like that. Christians walk out on, I don't know what, I don't even know how I would YouTube it. I don't even know what the how I would find it.
Yeah.
If you could find it, Brian, this Christians walk out on live performance. They poured water on his notes. He was doing a bit, and in the bit, he was like, there's, it's something to do with if you were having sex with Paris Hilton, like in the moment, you'd be saying, you'd be fucking her going, wow, I can't believe I'm fucking Paris Hilton. And then Paris Hilton would be thinking, I can't believe I'm fucking Paris Hilton at the same time. It was really, that was his, you know, it was kind of funny.
Right.
And this guy gets up And then they all get up. There's like 80 people that were there from a Christian group, and they start pouring water on his notes. They're like, and these are his original notes.
Oh.
And this is he doesn't have anything typed out. He has it all, his whole show written down on these notes. This guy poured water on it, and it, you know, it's like they were pissed and storming out of there because they thought that somehow or another this was
how is this offensive?
I don't know. They tried to grab his notes.
They're just
too.
Big Paris Hilton fans. Like,
no, I just think that there was her. The idea of them, someone talking about fucking in front of them. They're a bunch of creepy weirdos. Is really basically what it is.
Yeah,
you know, look, the whole idea of these Christian groups, and you know, you're going to go up and pour water on someone's notes, and you're going to be upset at them for their words. Mm-hmm. You stupid fuck. That's anti-Christian. You dummy.
Right.
That's absolutely the antithesis of what you're supposed to be doing.
I heard people yell. People get upset about stuff when they yell at you. I love when they're just so upset about a certain topic or joke. And they're like, I remember with you one time, I don't know, is this on your last special with the baby?
Which one?
The baby.
I don't think it's doing that.
Which bit?
Was it the kids getting blown? Oh, like if I walked in on a little...
no, you know, I never. That's never been on any special.
Is that
special.
Coming on this one?
I don't know. I haven't been doing it.
Or when people,
I think
get upset.
That bit might have passed its time.
Yeah, I mean, that. I mean,
sometimes I have bits that just pass their time.
Sure, but people get upset. You know, they get they're like, "How dare you? That's a 5-year old boy or whatever." Like,
you know what I'm going to do with that boy. Bit, man? I'm going to use that bit as like a fucking a bonus extra.
Yeah, I always liked the bit.
I always liked it
too, got me a little hard.
You know what it did? I didn't do it well in Ohio to the special. It was like something was off, and I decided to like
cut it out.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. People get when I like.
Yeah,
when
I like when they get a right
about a topic.
Righteous indignation.
Yeah,
like I talk about some guy that's fucking a dolphin. He was on the Howard Stern show, and he was having sex with his dolphin.
Whoa.
Like regularly, and I just, you know, I didn't fucking make it up. I'm just reporting it, and people are like, oh no. Oh no! It's like, really, you don't think in the world that this exists as a grown up topic?
You know, it's just like, right now
they
don't, you haven't really quite gotten your full stride as far as like people recognizing how funny you are and having like your own crowd.
I
I'm sure your
wait.
Podcast has changed a
it's
lot
helped.
Of it, right?
It's helped. It's definitely helped.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, if you the podcast is called Your Mom's House. Why? Why
is it called Your Mom's House?
We're obsessed with that whole phenomenon of calling each other mom. Well, like, what's the worst thing you could call your spouse is like mommy?
Right.
And we started doing it like in 07 or 08, and it just stuck, and it's just part
just
of our
like a
vernacular
silly thing,
in
like,
the house.
Like, I'm going out to the store. I'll be mommy. Back, mommy. Like, just something stupid to say, like, silly.
So dumb.
And then... I always thought that your mom jokes were dumb, so I thought it would be fun.
It's just juvenile.
Yeah, it's just juvenile.
We're real.
The whole show is juvenile. So just to say your mom's house, it's like, where are you going? I'm going to your mom's house. It's just silly to say. It's dumb. But that's what amuses me, is that it's silly.
Well, you guys are both very silly. You're my favorite married couple that are comedians because you're the only
Amen.
Ones that are still together.
Thank you. I know, right?
Everybody else I know, they drop like flies.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They
I don't know
hang.
Many others.
Well, you know,
I'm trying to think.
Well, there's in our business. You guys want some more of this?
Oops,
coffee,
yeah.
Not baby powder.
Thank you.
There's in our business. There's, you know, there's a lot of us that are fucked in the head. Like,
yeah,
for sure.
I
mean, this job is it's almost a given that there's going to be a certain amount of you're fucked in the head if you want to become a comedian.
Oh, for sure.
And so then to find someone who's got the right kind of fucked in your head that meshes with your kind of fucked in the head.
That's what it's all
for
about.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what it is, right?
That's a completely, that's the best way to break it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's all, like, fucked in the head, people think is bad, but it's not bad. If it wasn't for all of my fucked in the heads, I wouldn't have ever gotten anywhere.
That's right.
Because most of my impulses are to do things that are fucking completely risky, really have a fucking terrible future success ratio. You know, really no chance you're going to fucking get by. You know, if you had a kid and he said, hey, Dad, I'm thinking about being a stand-up, you'd be like,
oh my God.
Fuck.
Yeah, bad.
Oh, Jesus.
Don't do that.
Especially if he wasn't funny.
Oh,
that, exactly. That's how my mom treated it when I told her I was going to do it.
Oh, I dropped out of law school to be a comic after 2 weeks. Imagine that. And my parents are immigrants who escaped from Hungary to come here. So
my God.
The double.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But it is that we met, like, we talk about that, like,
law school.
Who else would tolerate?
It's the worst, man.
Tolerate what you say, you know?
Like, yeah, because I'm, you know, we're very inappropriate by normal people, whatever standards outside of comedy world people.
Yeah, well, you know, I was talking with Amy Schumer about this. We're sitting down, and she said something about her mom, like what her mom was made of, or something. And somehow or another, I got to asking her whether or not her mom was a cunt, or insinuating her mom was a cunt. Yeah. But I was like, it's so fun that, you know, with comedians you can do that.
Yeah.
My mom is a cunt. Right. Like, you know, you can say that.
Right.
But if you say that to, like, a lot of regular people, like, fuck you, man. That's my mom.
Right. Yeah.
Bro, that's not cool. Right. You know, we say that to each other. That's the dude. What's his name?
His name is Mike Daisy, audience protest on YouTube.
Look how badass Brian is. How did you not win the Shorty Award, dude?
Because it's not real. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, play. It's kind of interesting.
The moment. You can never fully be in that moment because you're thinking about what that moment signifies. And Paris Hilton, what's Paris Hilton thinking? Paris Hilton is thinking, oh my God, I'm Paris Hilton.
That was the punchline that I had already
gave
away.
New York.
Now they get up. Right. So he's sitting there. He's got this changed
look
in his
face. How big is getting up?
I think it's like 40 people or something like that. Wow. It was like the first time his show had sold out. And now he doesn't know what's going on. He's sitting there. They're getting up. And then one guy takes his water and he starts pouring it on the notes. So Christian-like. And then he shoves the water bottle in Mike's glass.
Wow.
Yeah, he just got up and fucked with them. And then he said they're leaving because of the language. That's the language. Producer. And so he tries to talk to them. He gets up, and all these people are filing out.
Hey, do any of you people who are leaving want to stay and talk about this, or do you want to run out like cowards?
We really don't want to hear
the F word.
Do you want to talk about this like adults that you came to my show to see, or do you want to walk out like cowards? Because I can refrain from using language when talking to you, but I'd like you to use the English language to talk to me. You insulted my show. You poured water on my art. You messed up my things here. Do you all intend to just walk out of here? Hey, ma'am, you appear to be an adult. Would you like to stay and talk about this?
Okay, so then he gets back and he kind of like, he takes it really well. He comes back and sits down and then starts joking around about it.
Is there anyone that would like to speak to what? Ma'am, please take a message back to your people. In the future,
people of
find
Earth.
Find out what you're going to see before you see it.
Thank you.
And you decide to do it to my face! Get out of here. Or if you're going to stay. I can't believe none of you would have the guts. And talk to me.
That guy doesn't sound gay.
Jesus, why?
Are you with this group? We don't have to. We were talking already.
But the point is, like, just like your shows, a lot of people, they don't know exactly what you're doing.
Well,
they're coming to a comedy show.
Just whatever.
Yeah, whatever's there.
But you wouldn't do that to a movie. You don't want, what's playing at the movie theater? I don't care. I'll pay money and two drinks and everything.
Assholes would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Assholes would. They would yell out at the movie theater too.
Yeah.
You know, the crazy thing about when they go to comedy is when they assume that the show and the comedy should be like presented to what, like when they think that should be presented to their tastes.
Yeah.
In other words, when they're like, yeah, but I'm not into this. It's like, this isn't for you.
I had a lady yell out next subject once at the comedy
show.
Next subject. I think she's even said drop it. Next subject.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've had that when they go, like, move it along.
Oh, boy.
Let's get past this.
It was my cloning Jesus bit. There was a company called, I forget what it was. It turned out to be a parody. Second Coming Project. That's what the idea was. The idea was they're going to take genetic material off of the Shroud of Turin, and they were going to use it to clone Jesus. And then my joke was, like, that stuff, first of all, is not 100% accurate. Like Dolly the sheep, they had to clone a bunch of dollies before they got one that would live. I go, what if they clone Jesus and he comes back retarded? I go, what happens then? I go, dude, what do you want to do? It's your call. I go, I say we follow him. It could be a test. It feels like a test to me. And then, like, instead of turning water into wine, he would turn dog shit into cookies. That was his move.
And I like that, Jesus.
And then I had this bit, and I was in the middle of doing it, and this fucking chick just goes, she just goes, next subject. But people feel like if you're, especially if you're saying something about religion, which, even though to the rational person, it really is kind of silly to be connected inexorably to some ideology. Who's ringing?
Oh, is that me?
It's probably the most unprofessional person in the room.
It's probably me then.
I thought it was Tommy.
Why am I so unprofessional?
I'm just kidding.
How dare you, 7-year-old white man?
Hey, so I got a new game for you guys to play.
What's the game?
Try to not flush the toilet as long as possible. So you have to stack your shit on hers, vice versa. Like if there's I call it flushless in Seattle. Just try it and see if you can go 3 days. That's my cutoff.
Tommy wins after one performance.
I'm sorry about that. My apologies for the phone ringing. What the hell were we talking about? I shut the other phone off, didn't I? Hopefully.
You're talking about
Jesus bits. Oh, next people bit. Freaking out.
Yeah, it's just a, you know, especially what I was saying is when it's a religious thing, like people like really feel like this is something you are not allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, this is my religion. It's funny when they say that. You shouldn't talk about politics or religion. Those are two things you should avoid. Well, those are the only, there's only a couple left for me to find out if you're crazy. What do you think about ghosts? You know, you ever see a UFO? There's only a couple more things I have left for me to find out if you're fucking crazy. You know, after what you get through politics, or as soon as you go, well, you know, I've always been a Republican. I'm going to stick with the party. I think the party line is absolutely right. And sometimes we go a little off track. Oh, you crazy asshole.
Crazy asshole.
Yeah. So if I can't talk politics with that guy, we're going to talk Bigfoot. We're going to talk Sasquatch.
There you go.
Yeah, people get really fired.
They get fucking mad, man. They feel like they're allowed to get mad too. Yeah. It's not like if they disagree with you on.
They take pride in getting mad about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's righteous.
Yeah. It is.
It's righteous.
And to even be offended. To the point
of finding an excuse to commit violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that guy only poured water on the notes.
Yeah, he could have. But I mean,
how close you pour water on some dude's notes and they're gonna fucking throw a water bottle at you and you might hit them and they might turn into some physical altercation.
Yeah.
That's
you
can't pour water on someone's fucking notes because you don't like what they're saying. That's a complete douchebag move. Unless the guy's notes are all a bunch of lies about you or something and you're mad.
Sure.
But if it's about Paris Hilton, you fucking weirdo. That's what you're picking your battles right there.
So this was not like a protest to go to this show. This was actually a group that went to a show.
Yes.
And we're like, right. We don't like this.
Yes.
Well, he says the F word.
Yeah.
And then these grown-ups can't handle hearing
what kind of show? Is he on Broadway or some shit?
I don't know. Like, it's in New York. I don't know. It's in New York.
That's so nuts, man.
Poor guy.
It's fascinating.
Don't want to hear the F word.
The
way he handled it was really interesting, too. You know, he was much more offended than I think a comedian would be in the same situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they came to his show and they fucked up his whole thing, you know.
Yeah, we're just used to being fucked with.
Yeah, we're just used to being fucked
with. It's just par for the course. Yeah. Like, Friday Late Show, let's do it.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Friday Late Show is always the most brutal, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's hammered. Everyone's tired.
Yeah, and you don't go when they they're leaving. You don't go like, does anyone want to stay and discuss this? You're just like, get the fuck out of here, you piece of shit.
Not even selling merch.
No,
yeah, just Jesus Christ,
go just fuck yourself.
Those are brutal shows.
Yeah,
how about the late show Saturday when you have to do three?
That's a nightmare.
Woo! Yeah. I gave up on those the moment I could. I remember those. I'd get those calls. No third show on Saturday? No third show. Whoa, last time you were here, we did a third show on Saturday. It was pretty successful. Yeah. For you. Yeah. Not for my fucking soul. Yeah. Not for my soul.
Quick comedy after that.
How many people are asleep at those shows? Like, literally asleep.
Yes.
Like, sitting there, drunk to the point of just complete incoherence.
You're doing that third show.
Oh, those are
brutal. You kind of feel like, if this were a 15-minute show, this wouldn't be that bad.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
They're still
that's
into
about
it.
The attention.
And then that all of a sudden.
The headline spot's brutal.
Right. The road starts to turn. Sometimes you'll see your feature have a great set.
Right.
And then you get up there and you're like 10, 15 minutes in, you're like, this shit's starting to change.
There's a wall that you hit at like 20 and you can just see their face glaze.
Yeah.
That wall. cut that it wall short. Matches yeah. the amount of shots that have been poured in that room. You know,
oh, yeah.
You start to see, like, oh, yeah. shit.
Midnight
oh,
show, yeah. you should cut short. I would say do, like, a 45-minute set or 40-minute set
yeah.
at the most.
Yeah.
yeah if you got to do a midnight show. Three but shows. Those oh, yeah. fucking brutal. Shows, the good thing about it, like, Ari Shaffir and I were talking about the opening spot. At a, like, one of the things that makes you really powerful is doing an opening spot where you have to go on first. The yes. crowd's not warmed up at all, and you go on. Doing that is, like, it makes you really fucking focus and lock in quickly. Mm-hmm. You can't just coast on the energy that's already been on stage before you. And mm-hmm. when people do well, you know, and they go on before you, you can just ride their energy. You just yeah. go up mm-hmm. there and coast. But to open
out of the
up,
gate, yeah.
yeah, it's really strengthens your act. You know, like yeah. I remember I watched you do it a bunch of times when we went on the road, and you know I could see you like setting up right away. You want to make sure that you come out of the gate strong, yeah. confident, hit them with some good shit right away,
right
and then
to, yeah.
yeah. It's like it's a tricky little first moment. The first moment they see you up there,
yeah.
and I'm like, how's this gonna go?
It's yes. so important though yeah. To do it like. To try to do it right away.
Yeah.
You get them on
yeah.
board yeah. immediately, and then you get your own wave.
Yeah,
to ride.
It's super but strong for your act.
Totally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you really learn how to develop, like, weapons, like an opening mm-hmm. weapon. You yeah. know, and just know this one's going to fucking kick them right in the dick.
That's
yeah.
why I love black audiences. Like, I did Cleveland, and there's so many black people, and I love them. Yeah. They're my favorite, because if they smell your fear, mm-hmm. you're fucked. Mm. If they even sense for a minute that you hesitate or that you're afraid of them, like, the whole energy shifts. But if they like you and they yeah. see that you don't give a fuck about what they think of you,
right.
you're good.
Yeah, I did and a lot of black clubs lesson. In Boston. Did a lot of shit in Mattapan. And there was a dude who booked these really good clubs. They were really good clubs, but it was all black crowds. And it paid better than the white shows. It was great. It was fascinating, man. Watching him. One guy couldn't do his room because he had a strict censorship policy. Oh. Very strict. He would like give the comics a speech before the show. It was hilarious. My friend John worked there. He goes, "No motherfuckers, no motherfuckers." He goes, "No bitch, okay? That's a lady." And he goes, "You don't say, oh, that bitch had a big ass. You say, that woman had a wide behind."
Oh, boy.
And the guy was like coaching. He actually said that. "You don't say that girl had a big ass. She had a wide behind." And they made people do, you know, like, really clean, censored comedy. But, like, it was one of the best rooms. It was one of the rooms where I wish that I did clean comedy.
Because yeah.
you could fucking crush that room. Like, they laughed hard. It was one of the first times I ever saw Reggie McFadden, too. Reggie McFadden, who's one of those guys that I never understood why Reggie McFadden never became fucking huge. Mm. The Reggie McFadden that I knew from like 1990-ish, 1991, I was convinced that that kid was going to be like one of the top stand-up comedians in the country. And one of the places I saw him was at this Champagne Comedy Club.
Mm.
No motherfuckers. No motherfuckers. You can't say bitch. That's a lady.
That's a lady.
And you don't say that bitch had a wide. That bitch had a big ass.
She had a wide behind.
Yeah, you have to say that. He had very strict rules.
God, thank God you don't have to be a clean comic these days.
It's brutal.
Huh? Like,
it's brutal. That shit's over.
Cable. Yeah.
Well, you know, what people don't understand is that everybody sort of got the idea that clean comedy was smart comedy because of television.
Right.
You know, the only reason why you had to have things clean on television is because you didn't want to offend the advertisers. It's mm-hmm. really simple. So everybody basically became a bitch to the advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
The advertisers, don't you want you talking about overthrowing the government? That's why they censored Hicks's shit when Hicks was on CBS.
Can't show tits and boobs.
You can't show tits and weed. Boobs. Can't show smoking weed. You can't show a lot of things. You know, advertisers, they want to be able to sell to the most amount of people possible. Well, then there's no artistic integrity or,
right.
you know, the right to opinion. All that stuff's out the window when you're selling shit. So they, you know.
Well, that's interesting. That kind of explains why TV sets are still sort of middle of the road.
Sure.
In terms of, like, late-night stuff.
They censor the shit out of your set. You know, there's very few, like, really edgy topics you could get away with if you're,
right.
you know, you're doing a Letterman set or you're doing, and that's, you know, that's not where it's for, what it's for. You know, it is what it is. But I don't think it's a more clever way of doing comedy. I've always found
either.
That it's, you know, to put shackles on yourself as a writing exercise, I absolutely agree with. I think I like to do that. That's one of the things I like about Twitter is the 140 character
mm-hmm.
limit. I think, you know, I think it actually helps my writing, like little zingers, you know, little quick lines. But I think to try to put like you know, it's hard to figure out how to do comedy and do it like the most with like the most effective way with the least amount of extra words. Like, you ever watch a guy talk on stage and you go, this is like, get to the fucking point.
Right.
Yeah. Like, the jokes are really funny, but the setup is like too clunky. There's too much words there. But then you watch a guy like Joey Diaz, and one of the art form that is Joey is Joey uses the least amount of words possible for the most impact. Mm-hmm. Like, he's brilliant at that.
Yeah. You know? That's a great way. That's a great formula. Period. Like, the thing that I see people, like younger comics, I think screw up with the most is not saying, they don't have a clear view of what their point is. In other words, they have their joke.
If you make
the setup and the point that you're making up front clear, your joke will be more effective about it.
Right.
But they talk around their point.
The premise.
Yeah. The premise is like, you're like, I think you're saying this. And they have a joke, and they're like, oh, I wonder why that joke doesn't go.
A big part of it is listening to your recordings.
Oh, I should do that, man.
It's fucking huge.
I hate hearing my own voice.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to do it.
I know.
Do you have an iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you have that voice notes thing?
Yeah.
Do you record your sets?
I've done it once or twice, but
it's fucking amazing.
I know. I have to start.
Set it on a stool.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah.
I do all the time. I listen to it all the time. And it helps me a lot because if I take like a week off, I'll just listen to like 4 or 5 sets in a row, and it's like I'm right back in groove.
Isn't that quite crazy that a week off is like a month off?
I don't like taking a week off.
No.
I like to do at least one set a week, you know, if I'm in the warm up stages. But like, because I'm doing this thing in Atlanta, I did, you know, Fort Lauderdale for a week, and then I was here for a week, and then before that we were in Louisville for a week. So it was like you get in comedy shape, you know. You get used to banging it out.
Yeah,
it's but great. I don't like taking a week off. I've taken more than a month off before.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's the most I've ever taken off in 10 years is about just under a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't understand. It's like you there's a certain amount of conditioning that's necessary to be a comedian. Mm-hmm. It's like a certain amount of getting used to it and doing it all the time. Like, you almost like radiation. You got to fucking build up a tolerance for it or something.
Yeah.
You know?
poison.
Which is a terrible analogy because you can't build up a tolerance for radiation. I don't know.
But it is very momentum based.
Yeah, like, it's them.
You carry that momentum. If you're doing it a lot, and you go tape your thing, it's like you've been doing it. If you take weeks off and you go try to do something, you're like, oh, it was fucking awesome.
Well, when we worked together, we did that Maxim comedy thing in Phoenix. That's the first time we worked together.
That's right.
And me and Charlie Murphy and John Heffron had been doing these dates all over the country. We did like 22 shows in a row. So we were just on fire.
Yeah.
And so what a great feeling that is when you're doing that many sets and you just go out there and fucking level it.
You have it so tweaked. Fun. You have it so like, you know exactly your beats, and you figure it out that you can add something here and change something.
Yeah, that was a fun time, and that's where I realized what size balls Charlie Murphy has. Mm-hmm. Charlie Murphy has gigantic balls,
literally like big.
Yeah. No,
he always put them out and put on our foreheads.
Take pictures, holds a hostage. Yeah. No, he was like headlining, dude. He'd only been doing comedy for like 2 years.
Yeah, oh my god,
it's crazy. He was headlining and doing an hour, and he'd only been doing comedy for 2 years. He has massive balls, that guy. He just basically took an opportunity. He got on the Chappelle Show. He was basically an actor before that. Took that opportunity. Started doing these little things where he would host things. Mm. And then people started giving him money to headline. And next thing you know, he's a fucking professional comedian. And now he's headlining all over the world.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
You know, I mean, that's balls. I mean, he was in his 40s when that all happened.
Wow.
You know?
That's wild.
Could you imagine starting in your 40s? That seems so bananas to me.
I fucking loved hanging out with him, though. He was a great guy. Loved hanging out with him on the road. Remember how much fun Charlie was? Charlie Murphy and Rich.
I went to dinner with them one of those nights.
Oh yeah,
they took me to dinner. Couldn't have been nicer. He had me pissing my pants, like, just with stories, talking about
that was
fucking hanging out with Mike Tyson. And
oh yeah, that story that he told on the podcast about the lion. Did you ever hear that story he told? Didn't someone animate that shit?
I don't know.
I feel like somebody animated the story.
The lion.
He also told me some.
Maybe I'm getting confused.
Story about like somebody disrespected him in front of his dad. And he had this, like, he got so enraged. But the way he told the story, you weren't like, wow, that's some serious shit. I was just, like, fucking crying, laughing about how upset he got, you know? He's natural. I mean, there's a reason those true Hollywood stories are so funny. His way of telling a story is just, you know what I mean?
That's
like, his diction and the cadence and the way he paints a picture. That dude's just naturally
funny. Yeah, it's the Joe Rogan Experience, Mike Tyson YouTube. This is just go to he was on our podcast when we talked about it, dude. So if you funny. go to the Joe Rogan Experience, Mike Tyson, he talks about
Mike.
He visited Mike Tyson over his house, and somebody animated it.
Oh, that's cool. I
didn't know that.
He has great diction.
Yeah, he does. And I seen Mike come around.
Yeah, Mike.
It was really weird because we didn't know him at all. And then next thing you know, a month, every single day, we were hanging out with him.
Couldn't have been better. Couldn't have been
a different city. That was exhausting.
It was great.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It was the most confusing time ever, though. Like,
yeah, we didn't know where we were. We would wake up. We didn't know where we were. You know,
we guys on bus, like tour buses and shit, or what?
No.
I think we flew every day.
We were supposed to have a tour bus, but the tour bus ripped us off.
Really?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They scammed you.
Yeah, they scammed us. There was a they had an address, and we drove to where the address was, and it was literally an abandoned lot. They scammed.
Wow.
Yeah, they scammed Sussman. Yeah, see, this is it, buddy.
Wow. Look,
this is the animation where he's talking about Mike Tyson.
Oh, that's weird. I've not seen that.
Yeah, if you could find that, folks, if you're interested in it, it's I'll tweet it later.
Oh,
tonight.
And I told you to ask him because that was another story.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you texted me.
I was like. Got to ask him about like Johnny Gill. He's hanging out with Johnny Gill, and Johnny Gill's like, "I could fuck up Oscar De La Hoya." He's like, "I'm gonna tell Oscar that shit."
That's funny. Well, Charlie was an old school karate guy. Charlie Murphy was an old school karate guy. He was doing karate from the time he was a young kid.
Yeah.
So me and him had like a lot of karate stories and martial arts stories. He's a huge like martial arts aficionado.
Well, and you know,
he sees you, he'll go "Oss."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He knows everybody that knows something about fighting. You know, it's funny like when somebody who says like "I could whoop that guy's ass," and you're talking about like a professional fighter. It's like,
oh, it's so it's a horrible thing to watch, but I've heard it come out of many a guy's mouth.
Many a dumb.
They talk about bro, what all I have to do is hit him once. Yeah. Let me tell you something. Uriah Faber, he fights at 135 pounds, and if you're like some regular dude and you're 6'3" and you weigh 230 pounds, that little dude's gonna fuck you up. He's gonna fuck you up. He's gonna be doing things to you that you don't even know what he's doing before he's doing them,
right.
And it'll be too late. And if he gets a hold of your neck, you're going to sleep. It doesn't matter if you weigh 300 pounds. If Uriah Faber can get a real guillotine around your neck, night, you go sleep. It's not that hard to cut off the blood to the brain. You know, you just pinch those arteries together. And if you have a good grip, and Uriah does, if he can hang on and keep that guy from prying him off for just 15 seconds, I bet he can do that.
Sure.
I bet he puts that guy to sleep. There's a lot of dudes out there that are professional fighters, and I bet they get disrespected occasionally by dummies. But for the most part, I think people are pretty cool about it.
Well, the thing was, the whole reason we were talking about with that story about Johnny Gill and Oscar De La Hoya is because people would say it about Oscar more because he had the pretty boy image.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but that pretty boy could fuck you up, dude.
Manny Pacquiao, man. I met Manny Pacquiao. He's like this tiny guy. He's like real super sweet and friendly.
Yeah.
Manny Pacquiao will fuck you up, man.
It would happen faster than you could get your hands up. Like, it would be over before you positioned yourself for your first punch.
Margarito. He broke both his eye sockets. Yeah.
So fast, so strong. And
how do you heal that?
You'd go to surgery. He had an artificial implant
in
one of his lenses. One of his lenses apparently got damaged in the fight, too. His eye completely swole up. One of them was just really fucked up. And apparently, just Manny Pacquiao just tuned his face up. And what's really crazy is, like, earlier in the fight, like, he was saying to his corner, Manny's got no power. He's got no power. I don't know if Manny, like, baited him in. Like, maybe Manny played pity-pat with his face a little bit and then started landing some bombs on him. But you're just dealing with a guy that, you know, there's that level, that Manny Pacquiao level, Floyd Mayweather level. Yeah. There are masters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Juan Manuel Marquez.
Super elite.
Masters of boxing.
Yeah. And it's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's so fun to watch. I've been going to this boxing gym, and there's this junior Olympian who does his sparring there.
Really?
And then I'm sitting there after basically a class, and the sparring is going on, and they're rotating people in, and they send in this kid who's really fucking moving. He's landing stuff. He's getting hit too, but I'm like, this kid's good. And they're like, yeah, he's been doing it for 8 years. And I was like, well, how old is he? And like, he just turned 15. And I was like, that kid could fucking kill me. That 15-year-old sophomore in high school could kill me, you know?
Wow.
He just watching him move, and like, he just had,
you know. They're fearless when they're that young.
Totally, yeah.
There was a kid that used to come to our jiu-jitsu school, and his dad used to bring him in when he was in high school. He was sort of being like sort of partially homeschooled, partially tutored by different people, but his dad was like real attentive, and his dad would bring him into high school. And this kid was an assassin. He was an assassin. He was 15 years old, and I was a grown man, and I outweighed him by like 50 pounds. And when we would go at it, I'd have to watch my fucking P's and Q's because that kid was looking to put me to sleep. Yeah. We would go to war.
Isn't that amazing?
I would have to wrestle a little rascal.
Yeah,
fucking get a grip on him.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Scary.
Yeah.
15-year-olds, man, they got no, and that's what he was into. He was into jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's amazing at it now. I mean, he was into jiu-jitsu. He was into choking the shit out of people. That's what he was concentrating all his time on, you know? Yeah. When you're a kid, too, and you find one thing that you're really fucking good at, and that feeling of being really good at something is so fucking nice for kids.
Especially, I don't know if it goes both, I'm sure it does go both ways, but especially, I think, when you're a 15-year-old boy, and you're looking for that direction and approval, and you find an activity that you get told you're good at, you know?
For sure,
focus on that. It's
also when you do something and you it's hard to do, and then you do it, you go, oh, I did that. Like, I went through something. I had doubts. It was hard to do, but I did it.
Yeah.
Now I could probably do something else. Like, it gives you this feeling that you can, you know, just attempt things and accomplish things.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Occasionally, I think about, like, what it would be like to own a restaurant. Not that I want to own a restaurant. I absolutely don't. But, you know, and I watch, like, one of these TV shows on restaurants, like Anthony Bourdain's show or something like that, when you're dealing with these guys who are working 16 hours a day. And the preparation of food and the going to the market and gathering up all the ingredients. Creating the menus and it is their life. And, you know, and you stop and you think about it, like, could you do that? You know, do you think you could, you know, the amount of fucking, I'm absolutely positive I could do it if I was so obsessed. I was obsessed in that way to do it. But everybody's got their own little whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. I don't know if everybody does.
Well, with comedy, some people don't. You have to put so much time and energy into stand-up, into being a comedian, but that's because we love it.
Mm.
Like, you're always thinking about things and material and this and that. But with food, no.
Do you ever do things, like, on purpose, hoping that it'll be funny? Like, go places, like, okay, this, I'll probably get some material out of this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, totally, right?
Yeah.
Well, the longer you do it, too, the more you feel like, you know, if I try this thing right now and it doesn't work out, like, it's okay.
Right.
I know how to get back on the horse from here. So, like, you take more risk, I think, the longer you've been doing it, right? Like, I feel if I bring up some shit right now and this fucking fails horribly because I don't know what jokes I'm going to say, like, I'm going to see what happens, I can still recover from this show. Just be like, oh, that was some weird shit. It didn't work out. It's fine. You know? Like, and then sometimes you get a good joke out of it, though, you know, just by trying it. But I wouldn't have tried that 5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I'll go down dark roads on stage just to see where my fucking head pulls me out. Like, if maybe some way there's a way that I can rescue myself, you know. But in life, I definitely have done a bunch of things. Like, when I moved to Colorado, one of the things I was thinking, I was like, damn, I'm going to get a lot of material out of this. You know, that was 100%. And I did. But
you did?
The wrong way. But, you know, it was, you know, like an exercise in doing something to. So, like, I'm putting my new special out. We're filming it next Friday, so I'm thinking, man, I'm gonna have to do some fucking serious writing over the next couple months.
We're filming it tomorrow, this Friday.
Friday, yeah, this Friday.
Oh, I thought you said next Friday.
Well, the one that's coming up next.
Yeah,
next Friday.
Yeah,
this Friday.
Should I say next Friday?
Yeah, no, you're right. Really, I shouldn't say next Friday, but I mean,
we're leaving in the morning.
Yeah, tomorrow. We leave tomorrow morning.
What?
That's really exciting, man. That's really exciting.
I'm fired up.
Tabernacle, right?
Yeah. I'm fired up, too, to do it in Atlanta, because I haven't been in Atlanta in forever.
You know, I love Atlanta.
It's been a long time. Yeah, it's perfect, because it's all new shit. All the stuff that I did before, it's from my Talking Monkeys in Space. So this is a completely new hour and a half, so I'm fucking fired up.
That's rad, man.
I'm so excited. Atlanta's got great fucking food, too.
I want to take a bite out of a peach while we're down there.
What are you talking about, girls?
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, look at them. Sexy, peaches. Sultry, cuddly.
A lot of peaches down there.
What was it like working with Brian at Death Squad?
Ugh. This man-child before me. Brian, what is going on in your head? I always think about that.
What is going on in my head?
He's a different kind of a dude.
It's a numbers game.
He's a different kind of dude. You got to accept that there's this, too.
Yeah, of course.
And also, I love him. There's Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss you guys. You're one of the very few podcasts that I still listen to, and I haven't listened to every single one. Are you guys still enjoying doing the podcast, or do you like it now, like doing it from home, or are you realizing, oh shit, it's a lot of work?
Dude,
it
is
both.
Yeah,
it's both. But
do you edit it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, look, for somebody who's not like into having or, you know, knowing what they're doing, it was a task. Like, it was harder than I thought just to figure it out, but I figured it out after the first one we put up was a disaster.
Disaster.
And then, but then, you know, by the next one.
I was so happy, by the way. I was just fucking just wrong. I was like, yeah, I told you so.
Yeah, terrible.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No, there were people. There was plenty of those tweets. Shouldn't have left, bro.
Yeah.
Well, they think they were not friends or something.
Yeah, well, people think that it was like, well, we don't like each other.
So. Well, your last episode at Death Squad was kind of funny because I kind of jokingly was acting like really like bitchy.
You know, and you know what people also thought was serious?
What?
That when you were like, you know, maybe this will end up on like the show, like Death Squad might end up on TV, and I was like, hold on, we don't want to leave yet.
That was
like, I was joking. So. They were like, you showed your true colors when you said,
yeah,
you
I was like, by the way, we're in talks right now with HBO. Just so you know, we had our second meeting today. And he goes, but wait, we were just kidding. No, we want to stay
here. They thought we were serious when I said we want to stay now. Like, they were like, you should, like, it shows what kind of person you are when you said you wanted to stay now.
Oh, yeah, we did show your true colors, like,
man. No, but I figured it out, dude. I figured out the audio, I should say. I haven't figured out the video.
The video's rough.
But the audio we figured out, and it is actually, we can do when we, it still work, but we can do two a week. We've tried to do as often as we can, two a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, we do it all. We have a little, like a room that has the board and mics and cameras that aren't hooked up yet.
That's
and,
good. Yeah. You guys are working. You're like a team, too.
We are.
We're a duo. And it's good because it works for our schedules. If we're both home for like 48 hours, we can crank out a couple.
It's easier hopefully. To walk to our second room than to try to schedule something. So that part was true.
Yeah.
It works out better.
Your podcast is one of the very few that actually is a husband and wife that's actually listenable. I that formula never really works for me. There's it's a couple true. Here and there that kind of are okay. But for the most part, when I hear a husband and wife, I just want to fucking shoot myself in the balls.
It is true.
Well,
that's a good point. That's
nice
of you.
Why is that?
Because you're very comfortable annoying? People. You're very fun.
Oh, no.
You're
why is it annoying about... other people.
Oh, what's it, but
yeah, you know, what bothers
because
you?
It's like listening to a couple. It's not like where you guys you're a couple but you don't fucking like PDA ourselves.
Well, right. Also you're cool. We're you're both cool. You actually are really good friends. You know, there's a lot of people that the only reason why they're together is this weird male female sort of thing going on where they have nothing in common, nothing to talk about. The conversations are all stunted. Yeah. You know, you guys are like clearly obviously like I wish I had that.
No, but I think about that a lot when you know, not to sound corny, but if he and I go to dinner and there's that table next to you that's completely silent and they're just eating and you're how do you do that?
Yeah.
Why do you marry somebody you can't fucking talk to? Because this all goes. The looks and your body turns to dog shit and all you have at the end of the day is a mind with another mind, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You may as well pick someone that you like talking to.
That's right.
Yeah, you got to pick someone that
always blew me away when a friend, like a lot of guy friends I have would date for a long time and or marry somebody that they didn't have like good conversation, like intellectually stimulating conversation with, and you're like, how do you fucking talk to that dolt all the time?
That's just well, they don't care, you know. They just that's where I'll get my pussy. Okay, great. I'll take care of the kids and now I'll go to work.
Done.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that just
why would
accept
you
it.
Make that your whole
life? Well, I've had friends that were in horrible relationships, and then all of a sudden they'll come and tell you that they're thinking about proposing. Like, should
they propose? Because that'll fix it, right?
Just buy a pet instead.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, especially the ones that are fucking at each other's throats. And he's like, you know, man, I'm just thinking that like maybe if we just were on a different level of commitment, like maybe this wouldn't be. Like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. She's a crazy bitch, and you're crazy for being with her, you crazy asshole.
You're a crazy asshole.
Or they have kids.
Yeah. And there's a lot of the reason why people do that. People like to get absorbed in relationships to distract them from their shitbag lives.
Absolutely.
They love it. They love doing it. It's fun.
Or distract them from their real issues, right? You don't have to address that's the real
fuck issue. Yeah. If you're overeating or you're over smoking or you're over this or you're over that or you're over gambling, you're over masturbating, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you just fucking, you'll be in the middle of it and texting. Where the fuck are you? How come you're not texting me back?
Yeah.
Our show is also, you know, the thing is, we have a profound, I mean, you know this better than anybody, Brian, that it's like a profoundly silly show. Like,
yeah, it's super silly.
It's so silly, and we have a similar sensibility. So, like, it probably wouldn't work if, like, the shit that made me laugh didn't make her laugh or vice versa.
Right.
We're able to.
One of my favorite episodes about that you guys did lately is, sorry, so I just totally interrupted you.
Go ahead.
Was your dad.
Yeah,
where he wiped a booger on an elevator. And just
Jesus.
Yeah.
It was real.
That was so fun. In San Diego, yeah.
That's so nasty.
Top dog.
Yeah. So nasty. Top dog.
Top dog.
That's what happens when a guy doesn't give a fuck about pussy anymore.
That's true.
Yeah,
well, that is accurate.
The thing is, he also, it's been one of those, you know, like dads have their dad bits, like they're like, you know what I mean? Like
one of his bits is boogers?
No, it's like talking about it. Like it's one of his bits for as long as I can remember. It's been like, if you get in an elevator with him, he will say that. Not do it. He'll be like, you know what I like to do? I like to put a booger on the on the lobby button.
Buddy.
And then I know everybody's touching it. And you go, that's gross, man. But he doesn't do it. We got in an elevator, and the first time in my whole life, he goes, hey, watch this. And he goes up, he digs one out, and I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. And I looked at him like that, and he was like, oh, sorry, buddy. And he knocks it off.
And it was a scraggler, too.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah.
And that's hilarious.
And on this podcast, he has audio of him telling their mom what the dad did, and the mom just like that's like normal for her. It's like she's always like
she's
seems like such a nice
she's so broken. Is that what you said?
Yeah, she's so done.
She has zero tolerance, zero for like a lack of class at anything gross, like gross shit. Does not make her laugh. Mm-hmm. So I like to tell her gross shit to hear her disdain because she gets so upset about it. Like she's like, and she can't even bear to hear it. And it just brings me to tears. So the whole show is me just like crying, laughing, and telling them about it.
I love your family so much. I like your family a lot.
You like his family better
than
yours.
Like mine, yeah. Mine's just, it's too much drama. And his is like, they're loving and like.
That's great.
Like his sister will yell from the room like, Mom! I want cereal! And then the mommy's like, okay, darling, and like brings her cereal. Yeah. Like that would never happen in my house growing up, ever.
Wouldn't happen in mine either, by the way. I'm not fucking doing that at all. But we've been talking a lot lately about our neighbor.
Oh, man. Yeah, maybe you can help us.
Okay.
What's going on?
No roosters?
No roosters.
This is different neighborhood.
Different neighborhood. So now, all right. So what happened was we rented a place that there's our place, which is a two-bedroom, and then the owner owns the unit next to it,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't live there, and like lives in LA in a different part of town.
Okay,
and goes, well, yeah, that's my unit for like once a year I have family come in for like a week, and then sometimes like maybe once a year I'll stay there if I'm doing business on this side of town.
Right.
And crash somewhere, mm-hmm. some shit like that.
Okay.
And so that was, I mean, it wasn't like part of the deal, but she was just like, that's just what it is.
Right.
Right.
So we're like, all right. So it's kind of nice because you have no neighbor. We didn't even know what it's like to have that neighbor. And then like in the fall, one day I'm in our second room, which has a connection, like a vent. And I feel heat coming in and I'm like, ah, shit, that's from the other unit. And I go, that's weird that there's heat coming from the unit next door, right? Because it's blowing into our unit. So I go and I knock and then it's this lady's like, I'm like, oh, who are you? And she's like, oh, I just moved in here. And I was like, you moved in? She's like, yeah. And I go, like, permanently? She's like, nah, I'm just going to be, like, looking for a place. But, you know, I'm staying here because I'm friends with the owners. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, how long do you think you're going to stay? She's like, probably for a while. And I was like,
great.
Like, how long? She was like, just probably for a long time. And I was like, fuck,
an indefinite amount.
Yeah. And then she asked if she could park in our driveway and all that shit.
And if she could use our internet connection.
Whoa.
And we're like, nah. Yeah.
This is on the first meeting. Like,
a little much.
Can I use your internet connection?
Yeah.
She was like, do you think I can get your password and I can throw you like a few bucks? And I was like, nah.
Whoa.
That's not going to work.
What did she say?
And she was like, okay. And I was like, yes, that's not going to work. She was like, do you think I could park in the driveway behind your car and I'll leave like my phone number like on a card like, in the car and then whenever
you're fucking serious?
Yeah. So she can block us with her shitty car.
She sounds like a hippie.
Yeah.
That sounds like that's exactly the type of mentality that I had to deal with a lot in Boulder.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of always need this, always need that. Can I get that from you, man?
I would think. I mean, I've been broke as shit.
Can I barbecue on your lawn?
Had the balls to be like, you think I could tap into your internet, man?
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's some shameless hippies.
Yeah. Like, no, dude, you can't do that. Yeah. No. And so
if
now.
If you could help me, man. Meanwhile, who knows what the fuck they're doing? Downloading some fucking terrorist handbook that gets on your IP. You know,
yeah.
And the fucking police come and break down your door, and you got to prove that this asshole was the one that was downloading this shit.
Absolutely. So then now,
what's scary is that they have to really worry about that too.
We start to hear her, right? We're hearing her, and then
God damn it! Just in general, no. Yeah. First, it's a smelling her fucking dirty cooking. Food. You smell her shitty food, and you're like, what is she cooking? Is she fucking, I don't know, oniony something in the morning, and I don't even like to eat in the morning.
Popcorn.
So, yeah, it smells like. Beefy, oniony shit. It
smells great. That sounds fucking. It sounds like inspirational.
Yeah. And then the capper is in the middle of the night, like at 2 in the morning.
Later.
Yeah, later. In
the, yeah.
You hear. Wah, 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 just in groups of threes. Wah,
wah, wah. When she's getting nailed?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
But she has, it's not even like a late night fucking. It's like a 4 in the morning.
Good.
Fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting someone's railed. Just
dropping. Sounds some like dick she knows a guy like me.
Yeah.
Have you been addicted to listening to it?
Are you a 4 in the morning guy?
No.
Hey,
this is crazy. Tom's being silly. When I was 20, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever you can get in.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Get it
4 in the morning. You know, she answers her phone.
Has Christina been gone once and you started hearing her have sex and you started masturbating with your ear to the wall? This.
No. Actually,
have you ever done it before?
You know, I've done that in hotels.
Hotels, yeah.
But, when you're home and you have that much resentment built up,
for it's not. Personal.
I don't think of it as exciting. Yeah,
you know this dumb. Yeah, bitch. I'm like, you don't
stop fucking coming.
Yeah. Too bad you don't have a sample of that.
We've been dying.
Try to record it.
We try to give it back.
Have you ever dated a girl that was so loud you wanted her to shut the fuck up? You're like, you're distracting the shit out of me. You ever had that?
Yeah. I've had loud, but I don't think about like so distracting.
I love hearing this stuff.
You do,
Well, yeah, because I never asked that question, so
yeah. Well,
I want to hear.
There was many, many years in the past. I was probably in my early 20s. There was this girl that I dated for a very short period of time, who would, you know, she would come to visit me like if I was on the road doing stand up. And, you know, and back then it was like always the shittiest, cheapest motels, the fucking nastiest beds. I mean, think about some of the places that you stayed when you were working the road.
Even how we're alive.
Jesus Christ. This chick would be like, fuck. It would be so ridiculous and so over the top. You'd be like, whoa. And it was always, and it was just, she was like ready to ramp it up the moment you stuck it in.
Yeah.
She didn't even build to it. It was like the,
she's Latin.
The overkill. It's crazy Latin bitch. There you go.
Crazy Latin bitch. She would go there off like a bottle rocket. The moment you stick it in, she'd just start screaming. Fuck yeah. It was like, hey.
So theatrical, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you believe it? Like, did you think it was that?
I was fucking 22 years old or whatever the hell I was.
Yeah, you definitely might. 22.
But she was the worst one in all of my history. Because I could just kind of be like, please, you got to stop. I was like trying to be polite. Like, there's other people that are staying here. This is late at night. Like, this is a small hotel.
Yeah.
Well, this what's fascinating is that I read recently that one of the things they say about a woman who's moaning and screaming really loudly during sex is that it's not exactly just pleasure, and that actually what she's doing is she's alerting other men that may be better suitors to come in and fuck her.
See, that's why you never make noise. I like to stay quiet, like a cadaver.
Just a little whimpering that no one's going to hear outside this house. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mommy.
So that's an interesting little...
That is interesting.
Little possibility.
Makes you really think about the screamers now.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, you know? I mean, it totally makes sense. Like, if you're more secure in the relationship as well, you also have calmed down. You probably... Yeah. The sex isn't quite as crazy because you're doing it all the time. You're used to each other. You can still have good sex for a long period of time, but you got to have some marijuana or some wine or something.
Or distance. It helps to be apart for like a week.
Yes,
and then you're like,
great.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Yeah.
But, what if...
like hang out with some Puerto Ricans for a week.
Right? Oh, I love those Puerto Ricans. Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm, yeah. A lot of Puerto Rican guys. A lot of gold chains.
Mm-hmm. Crazy screaming like that. Fuck. Like, whoa.
Your mating call.
That's her. You never know. You never know if it's real. And they're taking a big chance and going that hard.
It's theatrical. It's a little much. Yeah. It's a little over the top. It's a little.
Yeah.
Oh, my fucking God, my pussy.
What about that kind of stuff, like the filthy talk? Like, does that put you off? Have you ever had someone say shit that was too
Yeah, well, a girl told crazy. Me, fuck her cunt. And I was like, really? Is it a cunt? She's like, well, what is it?
It's that slit, that gash.
This girl was
stab that gash.
She was completely crazy, though. This is where it's good to have good friends, because she came to a comedy club to see me, and also my friends came. My friends were with, you know, like I brought her over to them, and she gave my friend her number. And then she goes to the bathroom. My friend calls me, you know, man, that girl just gave me her fucking phone number.
Wow.
I'm like, wow, you crazy hooker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, she was so crazy, she was willing to take one of my friends and just give him and hope that she could sneak her way in and just start banging everybody that I know. Wow. Like, on the sneak tip. There's some dirty girls out there. There's some dirty girls.
One dick at a time. Yeah. That's all I can do.
Well, I shouldn't know. I mean, this girl, I fucked her the first time I met her. She was completely insane.
What, the girl?
Yeah, this girl was incredible. She was insane. I was 21. I was 21, and she was completely crazy. But I didn't realize how crazy she was until she gave the phone number to my friend.
Yeah.
And then I realized she would just do that to anybody. She could, you know, you could just, all you have to do is start
for that or no?
Oh, God, no, that was the end.
That was it.
Yeah, I got to get rid of her.
Yeah.
She was too creepy. It was just like, when it's not just doing that, it's like the idea that, like, they're sneaking around behind your back. And that's a weird sign. And that's why it's good to have good friends. Because my friend came out to me right away and said, yo, dude, that fucking bitch, you know, when you're in the bathroom, that bitch gave me your number. And he shows it to me and he hands it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow.
Like, he wouldn't tell you, though, right?
Some guys wouldn't. Well, yeah. There's guys who wouldn't. Yeah, I had a friend. We had a real problem with him because he was always banging all of our friends' ex-girlfriends. Mm-hmm. He would immediately, this was back in Boston, it was immediately. As soon as he would break up, he would fucking immediately be just magically, hey, I was by her work the other day. She seems like she's taking the breakup
like
well.
Like a hyena, right? Like,
what do you mean she seems like she's taking the breakup well? What the fuck are you talking to her for? Hey, man, you know, she's an open game, man. She's on the market now. Like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, you're moving in? You're my friend?
No. Moving in on the kill.
Shit happens to me a lot.
This was a bad one, though. This was my friend Jimmy and Kevin. I won't say last name, so the fucking names have been changed. Save the innocent. They stopped being buddies because of that.
Of course. You can't keep being buddies after that. That's not cool.
You can't trust that dude.
That's trust
creepy. Can't trust it. So where are you guys at next? What's next?
I go to Chicago the 19th through 22nd.
That's tomorrow.
Schaumburg.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing that improv? That's a great I celebrated my 40th birthday there.
Oh.
That's a great place.
I'm looking forward Word to up. It.
Yeah, it's a good club. Yet. There's not really that much in Chicago. It's hard to find, you know, there's the Zanies in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then there's a Zanies in Vernon Hills, right? Isn't there one else?
I haven't done those yet.
I heard a new one just opened.
Oh, yeah?
Up.
Chicago used to have a great comedy scene.
Yeah.
Remember?
So, yeah, that's a Second City, right? Home base for Second City. Yeah, it's a good comedy town.
Yeah, there was a few guys. Wasn't there one of the guys from the Rodney Dangerfield special? He gave he got on one of the Rodney specials, and he was a Chicago guy.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Belushi.
He would say something and say that's a tip from your Uncle Earl.
Oh, really? Like a little catchphrase?
I like that catchphrase.
I forget his fucking name, though. God damn it. I'm sure someone on Twitter will alert me to this.
Yeah.
Like they always do. Twitter's the best for that.
It is.
They told me that Matthew McConaughey was in that Dragon movie. I was right, even though I couldn't imagine him being in that Dragon movie. But I remember he was like a badass. He had fucking tribal tattoos and shit. He was a dragon jacker.
Yeah.
McConaughey.
I'm going to Vancouver this week.
Ooh, back Comedy Mix. Yeah. Oh, that place is awesome.
So this Thursday through Saturday.
Who are you working with? Local guys up there?
Yep.
How often do you guys work on your own? Together, rather.
Together?
Seldom.
Seldom? It seems like you should be able to put something together because of your podcast.
Well, we've done it. We just did we did Ontario last month.
Uh-huh.
That was great.
Yeah, that was fun.
We did the improv out there for a weekend. It's fantastic. So, yeah, we'll probably do some more. We're doing the podcast live for the first time.
At a club?
At the John Lovitz Club.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
May 23rd.
Yeah, I've done a couple live. It's a weird dynamic. You feel like you have to get to the jokes real quick.
Yeah,
especially
yeah,
if it's like a large audience. Like if we were doing this in front of a large audience, that'd be boring as fuck.
Yeah,
it'd be weird, right? This is good when it's in your ear when you're at the gym, or it's good when you're on the road. Yeah. But I don't know if this is like live audience fodder. I would feel like I have to do stand up. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what I mean. It's the first time, so hopefully we get a good turnout. We could have, you know, we'll stick to, I think, a limited time.
Right, I don't think we want to go
too long.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the live one. It just seemed like we were almost trying to put on a half-fake conversation just to be more entertaining of people looking at us.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, well, we did it with Jimmy Norton, which was fun, because Jimmy just fell right into it perfectly and was killing.
Yeah.
He was really funny and, you know, on purpose funny and like really going for the joke. But yeah, it became almost like stand-up.
Yeah, it gets
weird. Does get weird.
We'll see, man. The audience.
Yeah. It's not this weird sort of intimate conversation.
This is different. Yeah, it's a totally different thing.
Do you guys have a lot of people from your that listen to your podcast that are coming into your shows?
It's starting. It's growing. I love it.
We talk about how much we like
it. God, I love
it. So awesome when
yes.
Because sometimes, you know, like well, sometimes obviously they have no idea who you are. Sometimes they've seen you do stand up on TV, like, oh, I saw your special, or I saw you on Conan or whatever, saw something, and then but then it was something different about, they're like, they say I'm a mommy to us, you know, like I love the podcast.
Oh, that's funny.
And then you just feel like, oh, this person actually knows me.
Yeah,
like
they know it's me such a relief.
That's super cool.
It's like, oh, they're on board. I can talk about dolphin fucking.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, let's talk about dolphin fucking.
Yeah, it's way
more
fun.
I like
fun.
That.
Yeah.
It's way cooler. I just added Peoria for next week. So if anybody's in Peoria, Illinois, I'm doing the jukebox.
We need to create a website, Brian, eventually. What we need to do is incorporate all of us and all of our podcasts into one website where there's like tiles. You know what I mean? Like everybody that we're sort of affiliated with, like Duncan and Joey and you guys, and there really should be one.
Just make it on your links on your website.
But wouldn't it be cool if there was like one portal, you know, where we could
iTunes.
All. No. Just but the ones that we're all friends with.
Yeah. And people could like listen, click and listen, or they could see where you're
at. Yeah. And have it. I mean, that would be like the best way to really get a gang of people to come to all of our podcasts is to have like a portal, you know, or Ari's podcast, Duncan's podcast, and each one has like a little square.
Yeah.
I think once you know it already. I mean, like on iTunes,
you just
subscribe and then you don't even think about it, you know?
Well, no, not necessarily, because we don't really talk about Duncan's podcast that much, nor do we talk about Ari's. Like, you can miss several podcasts in a row where we didn't talk about it. You wouldn't even know it existed. But if it was all clearly laid out and we had like a website where there was tiles, and you know, and that way, that would be a real way of everybody promoting everybody with, you know, no intention other than keeping, like, you know what I mean? There's no financial intentions at all. It's all just about keeping this one group connected and helping people. It's a good idea, right?
That's awesome.
We should totally do that.
Yeah. Especially for audiences. If you like Ari, you probably will like us or vice, you know.
And it'll pump everybody up.
Duncan, yeah.
That's what we need to do next. That's the next step. That's the next level. We need to have like a podcast community, you know, of all podcasts that we appreciate and like together.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of a channel, like Death Squad, like that's one way to do it too. But also the way to do it is to just make sure that everybody is connected to like-minded folks or, you know, other cool people, other ones that you might think are interesting. And then, you know, have it all like a one-stop shop. Where they know if they go to this is all the people that are cool with each other. This is like a whole group of people that are all friends with each other.
They all like each other.
Yeah.
Well, you're getting your website redesigned. Just make it a link page on that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do something along those lines. I'm also going to make a website specifically designed for the podcast. So there'll be two websites. It'll be like my regular website, and then there'll be a podcast, specifically designed podcast network. Or a website, rather. And that's where I think we need to come up with some sort of a link to a network. And maybe we all put a link on our site, and then that link will go to one website.
Why are you doing so many websites, though? Why are you breaking it up, I ask?
Well, it's not really broken up. It'll be a section on my website. But if you go to it, it'll go to one that, like, when you go to that section, it'll be laid out like a whole site just for the podcast. Each one will have a description of each podcast and who was the guest and how long it was and when it took place.
Do you know what percent? Is there even like it's got to be a small percentage of your fans that come to shows that don't listen to the podcast?
It's almost non-existent.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
That's
crazy.
That's
dude, we were in Chicago. Chicago was this giant fucking theater, sold out. And I go, how many of you guys listen to the podcast? They went fucking apeshit. They went so apeshit. Cool. It was crazy. It was beautiful. Wow. They're the coolest crowds I've ever had in my entire time of doing stand-up. It's never been cooler than now.
It's cool, man.
You know, even if one person's crazy, it's like we just get rid of them real quick, and it becomes entertaining. You know, this crowd's been amazing.
That started when I did Ann Arbor with you a few years ago.
Yeah,
that was before we had a podcast, and I'd done yours a few times.
Yeah,
and you were asking the audience, like, how many of you guys listen to the podcast? And in my mind, it was going to be like three tables. Like,
right,
that's what I thought. I'd be like, oh, these are all fans, but. Because they don't listen to the podcast. You know?
Right.
I thought it'd be like, oh, that's that fringe element. Like, you know, listen to it. And that fucking club went bananas. Not only that, then you asked, like, who here knows Joey Diaz? And the whole fucking
dude, people crowd. In Florida were calling out for me to tell Joey Diaz stories.
So crazy.
He's so he's so lovable.
So rad.
Yeah.
He's such a lovable human cartoon type dude. Yeah. You're just so lucky to have in your life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a fun guy to be around.
We're having him on next week.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. That was when the podcast first started to kick in. That was like somewhere around 2 years ago, right?
Right.
It was right after we had started it.
Yeah.
But I just bonked myself in the face with the fucking microphone.
I do it every day.
It's so stupid looking. Yeah. But that was definitely the beginning, but now it's like complete transformation. The
crazy.
Crowds.
When I did
no
your,
more Fear Factor crowds anymore.
The Vogue Theater with you in Vancouver.
Yeah.
That place the guy was like, there was more tickets like that we sold for this than even any music event show ever. And
they packed that place. That was nuts. It was really fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah. It's like it's definitely different now. The shows they're way different. But it's also I feel like more of a responsibility to like really produce good shit too. You know, I really feel like these aren't just people that are coming to see the show. Like I like them, you know. They like what we're doing. It's a different sort of a connection. Mm-hmm. So I feel like hugely responsible to like write good shit and produce good shit. Like that's why I'm excited to have this special come out now as opposed to like maybe a year ago when I could have put it out. But you know, when you have a bit, man, it's like a samurai sword. You fucking bend that blade and hammer it down and sharpen it up. And, you know, and as time goes on, you'll edit some lines out and add some to it. And then somewhere along the line, it reaches its perfect form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I think when you can use that sword to cut heads off after a couple of weeks, but it might not be the same sword, the delicate instrument of destruction that you'll have after 2 years when it's your closing bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
Is there a better feeling than coming up with a new bit and having a crush? I wonder. Yeah. I wonder because I have this new bit and I'm like, it's like my little toy. Like, I can't wait to use it.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And then, like, I use it and then I'm like, okay, now so let's play fun. With our old toys.
New
toys are a monster right now. Woo!
Yeah.
I love the fact that, too, as you get older and more experienced and more education and more information in your head and better as a comedian, that every time you come up with new shit, it's like better new shit. You know, it's scary to abandon everything, but once you do, and then you come up with a whole, like Ari had a real good point. Like he was saying that, you know, if you worked on a bit and you decided to like work on that bit for 5 or 10 years, you know, that all that energy you could have used on that bit, you could have like abandoned it 2 years ago and then worked on a new bit for another 2 years. And then you know, completely abandoned it and started all new. And all that creativity would have gone into something completely new and different.
It's
totally true, right?
Yeah.
So there's like a line that you have to cross. Like, when is it? Is it a year for a new act? Is it 2 years?
I think a year, if you start always turning over stuff after a year, you actually lose something. I think a year you have to be... If you're like talking about just abandoning everything and doing stuff every 12 months, I mean, just from experience of watching stand up,
right?
I feel like it gets better in that 16 to 24 month frame where you can do like it gets super tight, you know?
Yeah. Well, we've all gone through that experience of recording something and then the next week you have like a new tagline.
Oh, it kills me.
Like, over. Yeah. Mitch Hedberg actually redid a bit on the second album because he didn't have the tagline and said it on the album that he was doing that.
That's really cool.
Here's the new part.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's tempting when you've actually recorded the bit then maybe you should throw it out because you've recorded it. Yeah. You know, why hold on to something that you can't use?
Well, I talked to Gaffigan about this, and he and I are sort of in agreement about this. Like, yeah, you got to have all new shit, but you also have to do well. You can't have a bad show. And if you're tanking it with all your new stuff, it might be time to bust out some shit that really works and just pull this bitch out of the fire.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have to find that when is that time. Like, some guys, like, I think Louis C.K. pretty much just guts it out. And when he does new stuff, he just does only new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like Chris Rock used to do that too. Remember, he used to come in the store and he would just do only new stuff and, you know, and not be concerned whatsoever about it not going well. He's trying to make it go well, but if it doesn't, he's sticking to it. He's not going to pull out some old shit out of his bag.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's the way you build.
Yeah, that's one way. That's certainly a way.
Yeah.
Some guys like to sandwich it in between other bits, you know, and then slowly develop like them as new chunks instead of like.
I kind of feel like I get like a kind of energy out of opening with new stuff. You
know, I like to do it too. It's risky. It's scary.
There's
a risk,
but then there's a bigger
one. Christina, you're a risk.
Yeah, I'm a daredevil, man.
Thrill seeker.
It's exciting.
You have to be a comedian, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, you have to be completely willing to not have comfort financially, emotionally, sometimes physically.
But if it works out.
It's awesome.
If it works out, it's such a much better way of life than doing something you don't want to do.
Absolutely.
That's the big curse of this society. The big curse of this society is that it's so fucking complicated that a great many of us have to do some shit that sucks in order to keep this society rolling. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's all these jobs that suck. And then people have to do those fucking jobs. There's just no way around it. They have to get done. And so someone's doing it. And then the society is set up there. It's really hard to get ahead. And you're just scrounging and scratching, trying to take these jobs that suck. And then by the end of the week, you're goddamn exhausted. Mm-hmm. And that's how most people are living their life.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's really amazing when you stop and think about it. And I wonder how long society can really sustain itself once people get hip to that. Because once people get hip to that, I mean, what are we going to do? We're going to invent robots to do all the jobs that suck? Those jobs have to get done, right? Unless we completely restructure the whole foundations of our society, those crappy jobs are going to have to be there.
I don't think there's ever going to have to worry about that because too many people just revel in their misery and will. Yeah.
Or do they know they're miserable?
They don't.
Are they cognizant?
It's shit programming is a lot of it. The human mind adapts incredibly well to its environment and adapts to incest and violence and all those things and treats them as the norm. And that's what happens in every bad neighborhood all across the world. You know, the level of happiness is not often dictated by what their environment is like. You know, sometimes it's just they can get used to anything. You know, people can get used to it.
Yeah. But there's weird. People who also know they're miserable.
Yes.
But what they don't know is that they could make choices to get out of that misery.
Yeah.
They don't act on it.
You know? Well, the issue, obviously, is kids that are in those environments that don't have a choice and didn't fuck up to get there. You know, but to be in a shit situation, it's never good for the mind. It's never good for your relaxation, your ability to sit back and assess things.
I got to tell you, even when we lived in that terrible neighborhood for 2 years, it took an emotional toll on me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, God, imagine if I grew up in this neighborhood. Oof. And this is all I saw. And I never knew that there was a neighborhood just 3 miles away that I was going to move to that would change my outlook on everything. But it motivated us to work so much harder and get the fuck out.
That's really cool, though.
Place.
That's cool that it did that.
Oh, yeah.
You can just fall into the misery of it.
One of the things that I liked most about living in Colorado was that there was very few people up there, so I didn't feel like I was being inundated by other people's personalities.
Sure.
And when you're in a bad neighborhood, you're inundated by, it seems like hippie bullshit, but I believe that if you're in a neighborhood where a lot of crime's going on, a lot of negative shit is going on, you can feel it in the air.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You almost can feel it in the air. I would love to see like studies on plants that grow up around violent areas. You know, if they're like all fucked up and shaky and, you know, I wonder.
Nervous wreck plants.
Plants just always gunshots around here.
But it's true. You're a product of your environment. Like, I was remembering last night, in second grade, I hung out with this girl, Megan, and she was a straight-A student, or third grade, sorry. And my grades went up for the first time in my life. Like, I was getting straight A's because I was hanging out with this nerdy girl.
Sure.
Who was really into studies. And then the minute we, you know, stopped being friends, I went back to being my normal slacker C student.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
yeah,
but there is something to that.
Fuck yeah, it
and
is.
And hanging out with comics, too, that are funnier than you.
Mm-hmm. And prolific.
You want them to be.
Prolific,
yeah. There's certain guys like Bill Burr. He's always real prolific. Whenever I see him do a bunch of new shit, I get excited. I want to go write.
Yeah.
Chappelle, when I'm seeing him do sets, it's pretty rare. rare to catch them these days. But yeah, I would always get excited, want to go home and write.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we feed off each other for sure. Inspiring. No doubt about it. That's one of the beautiful things about LA. Think about how many good comics are here.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like this whole podcast network idea that I had. I mean, you can't do that in any other place. We have that many cool people. Joey, Ari, Duncan, you guys. Everyone is connected. Red Band. Everyone's connected. You know, yeah. Brett Fitzsimmons. If you put up how many great podcasts emanate from this one area, it's pretty much incredible.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of spots in the country where you could start like a whole network of podcasts that are, you know, as established as the ones that we have here in LA.
It's incredible how that has taken over as such a dominating force in entertainment, and it's going to keep growing.
Well, it's free.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really good. People are choosing to listen to them over
turning on a television or over watching a movie.
Well, it's really good to get shit done. You know, like if you're cleaning up your office. I love listening to podcasts when I'm cleaning up my office or something. Look, obviously, I do a lot of cleaning. You know,
you should see our place.
I have too much shit in here. I need to get rid of some of it.
But the
idea that it's in a lot of people's ears when they're at the gym and they're pushing themselves through their workouts and stuff. I mean, I think that's one of the coolest aspects about this form of entertainment. It's like it's the form of entertainment that makes doing other shit more interesting. You do it while you're on long drives. You do it while you're on a commute.
It is the best
for airplanes.
Airplanes all the time.
Yeah.
And if you get three or four good ones, man, the whole flight to Australia is done. You know, you just plug those bitches on, kick back, you know, have a glass of wine, and join in, man.
Yeah.
Maybe if you've timed it correctly, you take an edible when you're at the airport. Right as you pull up, you don't want anything on you, folks. Don't fly dirty.
Don't be scared
of flying with an edible.
Yeah.
It's a life-changing goddamn experience.
And you know what's great about podcasting, too, is that I feel like it harkens back to the time of radio when people had to just sit and listen and listen to long stories. And that doesn't exist on television anymore. Everything's cut so fast and everything, the information's so quick that now it's like we're going back. And I love that idea that you can just sit and listen to like a 3-hour thing.
Yeah. So it also gives
just talking.
Yeah, that's
natural.
Natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not this hyper information.
7-minute set on the Tonight Show where you're sitting down on the couch talking about your
or television
recent experience at the zoo.
Fucking half second edits. Boom,
exactly.
Boom, 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 boom.
Like, yeah.
You know. Yeah, and then they tell you, coming up next, you're gonna see this scene. And then you come back from commercial, you're gonna see this scene right now. And then they show you the scene and they're like, yeah, man, I get it. I fucking got it. Like I can process information.
Yeah. If we had a producer of the show and they were like, well, this is some of the things we're gonna do to take it to the next level, okay? We gotta edit. We gotta edit it. There's a lot of downtime. Yeah. There's 2 minutes where you're twittering. You're twittering on this fucking podcast for 2 minutes.
Sure.
You know, sorry. No!
That's actually what I love.
That's part of the beautiful thing about it. It's like when you hear you talk, you get to really know you. When you hear you talk, you get to really know you. It's not a sound bite. It's a long conversation.
I noticed that like with a lot of foreign films sometimes, you'll have longer shots. They won't edit. Right? They won't cut. And you're like, yeah, but that's actually a very, like, if a guy's making breakfast or pouring coffee, they'll let the shot go of him running it and the coffee pouring and then him pouring it in and stirring it. And you're like, but that's not, like, that guy's really making coffee.
Right.
Like, so it's not
with
fucking 15 cuts to make it. Like, yeah, but that's, you're watching, like, real life kind of develop right then.
Right.
You sink into it more. But American style of editing TV or film is always, well, don't let a shot last too long.
Music video style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the way things are.
Do you think that is making people dumb or making people impatient?
It's making people, I believe. For instance, on Facebook, like, not like. It's all binary. Zero, one. Coke, Pepsi. Yes, no. You know how limiting that is to human thought? I mean, I don't read books right now. I mean, maybe one in the last month, but like it just limits the way we see the world. This generation only grows up knowing I like this, or epic fail. That shit makes me bananas. Fool. Oh, really? That was a fail? Like some guy tried something and didn't succeed, and we're all going to shit on that person.
It's also we encourage people to be like, that sucks.
Yes.
Right. You fucking suck.
It's a culture of that sucks.
And then there's YouTube comments.
Repercussions.
There's no repercussions. You're completely anonymous. So you're allowed to say things that you would never say with any real, you know, a person in front of you because it would be it's such a cunt thing to do.
Sure. Yeah.
It'd be horrible.
They're assholes. They're shitty about it. They're racist.
Yeah.
They're
Oh yeah.
You know, they're misogynistic. They're homophobic.
Oh.
Yeah, it brings out.
Well, that's normal.
But
come say it to my face.
It's a weird thing where we've developed a way to communicate with people that is there's no interaction, there's no exchange. You're allowed to throw the information out there like a bomb, mm-hmm. like you lob a bomb over a building.
Your message. Mm-hmm. board is a perfect example of that. like if I was just talking to you and guys in a room and then some guy came up and is like, you know, you're just annoying, I think your face sucks, and you're just like, you would not just come up and ruin my conversation.
And people don't understand when I kick them out of band and they say, yeah, I can't believe you want censorship. I don't want censorship. This is what it is. This is a house party. My website is an internet house party, yeah. and anybody can join. Mm-hmm. But when you're a cunt, when you create problems and negative energy, when you don't know how to, even if you have a criticism of something, there's a lot of people that have had very valid criticisms, and those help me. I really think they do. I think valid criticisms on the podcast or stand up or even my MMA commentary, anything. I don't think anyone's ever perfect, and I think a lot of times, especially when you're doing as much on the fly ad-libbing stuff as I'm doing, 99% of my living I make completely ad-libbing. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to make mistakes when I'm doing stand-up commentary for the UFC. I'm going to make mistakes when I'm doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of life. So I appreciate criticism, and I understand that, like, when I'm doing something, oftentimes it's completely unplanned out. Like this exact sentence that I'm saying right now, completely unplanned out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, people like will nitpick and criticize the hidden meaning behind each fucking word, or each word you chose or way you went with the conversation, it's like, god damn, will you just settle the fuck down? It's like you give people too much of an opportunity to be cunty.
Yes.
You know the Neil Brennan podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Some guy was saying that I was yelling down Neil because I didn't agree with his statements. I was like, what the fuck podcast did you listen to? We had a podcast where we all had fun together. There was no disagreements whatsoever. But people will break this shit down to make it they will just nitpick on only the negative aspects of it. And it's always people that are fucking miserable.
But Joe, you gotta also think, like, each one of these episodes, not getting into exact numbers, let's just say hundreds of thousands of people listen to this, and you might hear, out of hundreds of thousands of people, you might hear like 20 people. And that's the bottom of the barrel, most negative. They have a million cats. They're fucking crazy, assholes in general. And if you focus on those 20 really and not fast. The 490 million other people, then you're going to go drive yourself crazy.
That's a good point. But I firmly believe that you can't be too self-congratulatory, and I think you have to address any possible valid criticisms. So when I read negative shit, I have to take it into assessment. I have to go, okay, I got to look at this objectively. Did I do that? Because I know when I've done something wrong. I've made mistakes. I know when I do. Did I do that? And then if you don't, then you have to go, well, why? Well, then you got to look at the motivation of this person and try to figure out, like, why did you look at this whole thing so skewed? Like,
well, that's the driving you crazy part
that I'm talking
about.
But
it's fascinating, and it's important to out those people. It's important to out those people to set the tone for the rest of the board.
Yeah.
You let those people know that, look, this is what's going on here. This is just cunty negative behavior. It's not necessary. Let's communicate let's communicate like we're at my house. We're at a house party. Let's be polite. You know, look, if we're at a house party and someone comes up to me and starts saying, hey, the Mormon faith is a true faith and Joseph Smith is. Okay, let's have a polite conversation about this. Yeah. You know, let's politely talk about you. Tell me why I'll pretend like you're my wife's husband, wife's friend's husband. You know what I mean? Right. Like you're a guy I have to be nice to.
Right. So respect. Go ahead.
Yeah. Tell me what the fuck you think, and hopefully we can get through this without anybody raising their voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but on the internet, it's right away. You fucking faggot. right away. Hey. Retard. Go back to school.
Kills me.
Fail.
Sucks. Stupid cunt. You're so dumb.
Die.
And it kills me because, like, when I'm growing up here in the valley, if you said some shit to someone, you got fucking smacked. I used to fight with black girls because I would say shit.
Whoa.
Yeah. But you know what I learned?
What?
Not to fucking say shit to people. Because you get punched.
And don't fight with black girls.
You fight with black chicks and they fucking tell you what's up. And guess what? I don't write awful things on the internet to people.
How often do you go on World Star Hip Hop?
What's that? I don't even know
you
that
know
is.
What WorldStarHipHop.com
is? No, what is
If you would go on WorldStarHipHop.com, you would cease and desist all fucking with black girls immediately. Because nobody lays a beating on another girl like a black girl
Thank
does.
You. I know.
Oh, my God. There's a recent one where over a Twitter beef. If you just Google WorldStarHipHop.com Twitter beef.
I got it.
Somebody sent it to me. Brian will pull it up. If you want to pull it up, Brian, pull
black
it up on YouTube.
Black girls are the best fighters.
WorldStarHipHop.com. Is that on iPad? Will it work on the iPad?
We should make them MMA fighters.
This chick beat the fuck out of this girl and went right away to the old school pride head stomps. She was head stomping her. She got her down, ragdolled her to the ground, and stomped her in the head immediately like a killer.
Yeah.
Threw bombs at her, like really vicious bombs, punches and stomps.
There's some real brutal
ones. There's great fighters.
On WorldStar, there's some like... There's some street like knockouts where you see the head hit the concrete.
Oh yeah,
and like
a lot of them, and then they start kicking them in the head while they're down.
I didn't get it that bad. I just got punched in the stomach three times, and I was like, "All right, I'm sorry."
WorldStar hip hop is easily the worst example of humanity available on the internet outside of snuff films.
Yeah,
because some of those people might have died, and if they didn't die, a piece of them died. There's one guy that got knocked out where they just kept kicking him in the head while he was unconscious. It's so hard to watch. That guy is forever fucked. There's no question in my mind that damage that he got that day to his brain is irreparable. He got hit by punts, soccer kicks to the head while he's unconscious. People are just running over and punching him in the face. So he's getting just concussion after concussion. His brain is just swashing inside his skull. Oh. For sure, he's going to be fucked up for months. You know,
you see the one in Baltimore where they knocked him out? And then they start taking his clothes off.
Jeez. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Right.
And that the sound of his head falling onto the concrete while he's unconscious when he gets knocked out by the punch.
Yeah.
Oh,
I have a hard time watching Rocky.
I got
movies.
A bunch of tweets from cops in Baltimore because Neil Brennan and I were talking about it. Neil was saying, well, it's like sort of a mob mentality that takes on. And I said, well, I totally agreed to a certain extent. Although I agree to a certain extent that mob mentality is real and it does happen sometimes, I don't think that's what was going on there. I think that was a drunk guy that was around a bunch of criminals, man, and they're just used to that. And these guys from Baltimore, these cops from Baltimore, tweeted me, and a bunch of them were telling me like read this, check out that, you know. And other people tweeted me about the same issue. Like apparently Baltimore's got a crazy fucking crime.
Yeah, it's always at the top.
One cop said he's just shocked at the amount of crime he sees every day.
Charm City.
Yeah,
they call it.
But you would think like Baltimore sounds like a bunch of white people that live by the water and eat crabs. Right. You know, this is near Maryland.
Isn't D.C. also like that? Washington D.C. You would think that would be the best. In that
D.C. They're Lokesters. They're Lokesters. Yeah.
What about Detroit, Detroit?
Yeah. D.C. is only about a half an hour away from Baltimore.
Oh right, man.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any of those, bro.
Rough city, man.
Wait, what's it called? What would the search words be? You just said
World Star Hip Hop. No, not Girl Fight. World Star Hip Hop Twitter Beef.
Twitter Beef.
Yeah, just Twitter Beef. Because I think there's not a lot that fall into the category of Twitter Beef. You know, this girl showed up at this girl's house and said, we're going to fight. And while the other person was filming it, she pulled her out of her house and it is violently beat the fuck out of her.
Girl on girl fighting is crazy to me.
They have compilations.
No, that's Jennifer Hudson, bro. World Star Hip Hop Twitter Beef. Just Google those words. World Star Hip Hop Twitter Beef. Look, here, I'll do it real quick.
You know, even Oprah Winfrey gets people like hatefully emailing her. Like, I watch the Oprah Soul series.
Yeah, of course.
She talks about it. She's like, people send me things. I'm like, really? You're going to hate on? She's just trying to, like, help the world, man. Oh. I mean, even if you don't agree with it, like, don't hate mail Oprah Winfrey.
Nope, that's not it.
People hate the shit. I hated her a long time.
Girls.
Because she's successful, too,
though. Of course, yeah. Yeah, people hate everything. People hate the Beatles. You fucking watch on YouTube under Beatles videos.
Yeah.
People hate them. Fight compilation.
Yeah, here it is.
Twitter
Home invasion. Right here, bro. Mm-hmm. Here it is right here. WorldStarHipHop.com. And it says home. Just look up home invasion. Girl gets tore up on her own doorstep over Twitter beef. Just look for home invasion.
Mm.
Home invasion, Twitter beef on World Star Hip Hop.
So you clean this out on this end, right?
That's when you release the Kraken of shame.
You don't want that.
You don't want that? Maybe you do. Mm. Apparently there's a video where a girl puts one of those up her ass and then a guy fucks the fleshlight.
That's my idea.
Was it really your idea?
Jerks.
Well, by the way, Brian, I don't think you're the first person to think of that.
What?
Shit.
In her asshole, but why not her vagina hole?
Well, because her asshole is more pliable.
Gotcha.
There's a lot of girls that have giant dumpers. They can take large objects up there. That's a really, you know, give a guy a really distorted perception of reality if he's into that shit, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. We could put this in somebody's
asshole. I don't like
asshole.
Anything in my butthole.
Really?
Nice. Nice.
Not really.
Nice way to announce it on the podcast.
There's a couple things
I like to share.
Well, it's important to share. Especially with the world. Just like this, you know, this lady has the right to stick a fleshlight up her butthole. You can know that someone can do that. You should also know. Watch this girl beat the fuck. Can you go full screen on that? Yeah. Watch this girl. She shows up at this girl's house. It's coming up real soon. It's coming up real soon.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Everybody, bro. Who's going to talk to you, bro? I didn't say everybody. I said my people. This is who you're talking about
today. Watch. She just pulls her out of the house.
That's how it happens.
Ugh. Look how violent this bitch is.
Bam. Oh, oh.
She's beating the fuck out of this girl. Stomping on her head, kicking her in the head.
Pulling her the hair. Look how strong she
is. Look how strong that girl is. She's pulled her down the stairs by her hair.
That's so scary.
That's horrifying.
Talk about that, ho. That should be on a t-shirt.
That, yeah. Talk about scary. That.
Talk about that. Oh,
yeah.
That's, see, that's what can happen.
You that is what can happen.
On Twitter.
Don't talk shit to black girls.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Did you hear a guy he got arrested in England for saying something on Twitter? Have you heard about this?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me find this because it's fucking crazy. It was on Stanhope's Twitter.
Arrested?
Yeah. The dude's name is Ollie something or another. Let me find it real quick. Let me go through my Twitter. But it's fucking crazy shit. Apparently, he was fucking with their government over there. Here it is. The guy was arrested and convicted. The guy's name is Sir Ollie_C. And he got arrested and convicted for saying cunt on his Twitter. And I'm not bullshitting. And this is it's about Section 127 of the Communications Act of 2003 is what they got him on. This is all the guy wrote. Ready? Which cunt lives in a house like this? Period. Answers on a postcard to Bexley Council. So I guess it's the Bexley Council that he was having a problem with. So that's all he said. Which cunt lives in a house like this? Answers on a postcard to Bexley Council. And that's like that was the hashtag, Bexley Council. And then here's another one, another tweet. It's silly posting a picture of a house on Twitter without an address. That will come later. Please feel free to post actual shit. Okay, what that means, I don't know. But it sounds like he put a photograph of a counselor's home. Yeah, okay, Melvin Seymour. He put a photograph of this guy's home.
Probably not a good idea.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, that changes everything because that's creepy as fuck.
Yeah,
that he put this guy's picture and he took a photo of it, but that they got him for using the word cunt is what's fascinating. That they didn't get him for taking that picture, which apparently is legal. Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah, yeah. For saying cunt
or for calling
the guy
a government guy.
I don't know, but he's saying which cunt lives there.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Well, cunt is a lot less offensive in the UK. Like you call people cunts. Like every other word, it's not a big...
Yeah, exactly. Cunt. So we really should have been... They should have got pissed at him for taking a picture of that guy's house, but I guess they couldn't do anything.
He got arrested for this.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently. And, of course, Stanhope took up the fight. Did you see Stanhope, the thing that was going on with him and that lady in England?
No.
You didn't see? Oh, it was great. There was...
Yes, I did read something about this, where he was doing shows over there.
Guy's horribly ill, okay? And this woman wrote this thing about how saying this guy does not have the right to die, and that it's not his choice to decide when to die. So Stanhope comes on, and not only does he like go after her, and he goes off on Twitter and says, "Guess congratulations, you made it into the act." You know, he's saying all this shit on Twitter, and then he he hopes that she gets a fetid cyst on her ovaries, like all kinds of craziness, right? He's out of his mind. So so then she like writes some whole like really crazy, dumb, terribly written article about him and comparing him to some other horrible people in the world. And, you know, what she doesn't address is the fact that she had written an article just a couple of years ago praising a mother for taking her child's life, you know, when the child was deathly ill and suffering and was going to die. And so she's a hypocrite in her own writing.
Yeah.
Like she's not even accountable for her words. It's just verbal diarrhea. She's one of those dumb people that writes things down and tries to make some sort of a point because her job is to write an article. And Doug found her conclusions to be illogical, idiotic, and offensive. So he, you know, he asked for fucking injuries to her body and pussy problems. And I mean, but he's a fucking stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So she went off and, you know, she was, you know, trying to get him arrested and had them investigate him and all sorts of different shit. But, you know, he didn't really do anything wrong. And, you know, the whole thing is hilarious. And the whole thing only probably made Doug an even bigger hero in the UK because she's a moron.
Yeah.
If you read the shit that she wrote, she's such a fucking
dingbat. And he did this while in England, right?
Yeah, while in England.
Yeah.
Which is crazy when you think about how lenient they are. Because in America, all some kids had to do was saying they were going to come down and destroy America and dig up Marilyn Monroe's bones. Mm-hmm. And they said that on Twitter. And so they were coming to party, okay? Mm-hmm. And the fucking people at the TSA or whatever the hell it is. What is it? It's not TSA.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Homeland Security.
Right. Yeah, they sent them back. They arrested them. They interrogated them and sent them back home. They looked in their shit for shovels. They thought they were really going to... Like, they're going to bring shovels with them, fucking dummies.
So nerdy.
TSA's the worst, man.
Silly bitches.
Dumbest of all.
They really are.
But they sound like fun people. I want them over here.
Yeah.
They say they're coming over here to destroy America and dig up Marilyn Monroe's bones.
Where's that the party?
We're going to fucking throw down here.
Yeah, that sounds like some people who, we could have a fucking good time with them.
Yeah.
They sound like some people that are coming here to have fun. Yeah. What the fuck? You don't think they're really going to destroy America? What, Al-Qaeda could do it, but some 24-year-old couple from England's going to pull it off?
Some drunk kids.
Stop.
For sure.
Yeah. Trump kids straight out of college, bitch.
This reminds me of Tommy. Remember that article you sent me about that woman in the UK who claims that she's too beautiful?
Yes, I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah. I think that's great. Subtle satire, if I had a guess.
You think?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that. It played you could read obviously like that, but the fact that there were like all these follow ups, I mean, it's either a well orchestrated,
I don't know,
crazy bitch. Hoax,
or it's a crazy bitch.
Yeah, bullet, little both.
She seemed crazy.
Bitch. I think the writer had a little bit of tongue in cheek while he's writing it because he kind of knew that she was really a six. So as he's putting that picture out, she wasn't really attractive.
But she was okay. She was sincere.
She wasn't ugly. Yes, her position. I think so.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. She was sincere.
Yeah, a bit of Windy City Heat.
It also, felt like it. But the best was that, like, everybody who was critical of her, it played into her ridiculous life. She was like, see, all the haters came out. I'm so hot.
There are a lot of haters out there. How do we fix it, Christina?
Oh.
How do we get rid of them? How do we bring them up? How do we raise up the haters? Is it possible?
Therapy. Weed.
Therapy is going to help, for real?
Psychotherapy.
Does that stuff work? Because a lot of people that I know that have been in it say that it doesn't change them.
Changed my life.
For real?
I've been doing it for 2 years.
2 years.
And it's improved my... I used to I'd be riddled with anxiety and depression.
Really?
I was, I was goth. When I was 14, I was suicidal. I was crazy.
Whoa.
And I was depressed for years. And 2 years in psychotherapy, and I'm, infinitely better.
That's amazing. You're the best success story I've ever heard from it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I have a great psychotherapist if anyone wants.
I have too many friends that keep going to therapists and keep continuing with the same fuck-ups, and it's confusing to me.
If you're not seeing progress, I know people that go to the same person for 10 years and are the same, going in circles. You need to find somebody that can really get to the root of your bullshit.
Right.
And then I believe undo that.
So you
bullshit.
Got super lucky first time with this. This is the first counselor.
I had seen some other guy that was wearing white Velcro shoes and mommy jeans.
Holla.
Yeah, and I was like, yo, you can't even dress yourself. You can't fucking counsel me on my life. So I dumped him.
What's
and then
that about?
This broad's she changed my life.
Velcro never really caught on for shoes, did it? It's great for little kids.
In third grade. Yeah. Kangaroos.
Yeah.
The little Velcro pouch.
It's weird, isn't it?
Bring that back, man.
It's very useful.
It's very useful, but it's just so douchey. There's something dorky about Velcro for whatever reason.
Yeah. Real lame, man.
Yeah, never caught on. Why is
especially
that?
White
shoes. It caught on. It was really popular
Velcro.
For a while.
No, but I'm saying it's not there. Most of the sneakers we buy have laces.
Right. I saw it the other day. I think the problem with Velcro though is after a couple of weeks, start getting shit in the Velcro, like cotton and stuff like that, and they start being annoying. Where in the past you just get new shoelaces.
Right.
They lose their sticky.
Yeah.
That's true. But they should be able to replace that shit like you replace shoelaces.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to go somewhere and do it. That's annoying.
That's a nuisance.
Yeah. That's stupid.
I like Vans right now. Slip-ons.
Look at you.
No laces, no Velcro.
Do you have them in the Cheap Trick black and white checkerboard?
That's too dykey.
Too dykey.
I'm a lady. I'm a lady.
Language.
Too dykey.
Look, I'm already crossing the line as a female comic, so I try to keep it somewhat feminine.
Do you feel like as a female comic, I've always felt, tell me if I'm right, that it's harder because you have less people want to hear you talk.
No one wants to hear me talk.
Less people want to take your opinion seriously because you're a woman.
For
so if you get on stage and you want to start talking about politics, immediately you're running uphill battle.
For sure.
You talk about sex, you're a whore.
For sure.
Do you look at other comics, guy comics, and go, God, they get away with so much?
I do, but I also grew up admiring male comedians. I really loved watching Bill Hicks and a lot of dudes. But yes, you're right. Absolutely. Society doesn't privilege intelligence in women. You should just be hot. So that's the message you get growing up. Just don't read books. Just be hot. Mm. So you're up against that. I actually try to channel masculine energy. when I go up there. I try. Really? I always have this image of me putting my dick on the crowd.
Do you really?
Yeah, I swear to God.
Have you ever worked on this with your counselor?
Yeah, but I don't want to fuck with how I do stand up.
Is he like approve of this lay the dick on the crowd method?
I guess because it works for me in that, like, there's, you know, different parts to your personality. I'm not that way at home with my husband. Right. I'm a woman with my husband, right? Like, I like being a feminine, but on stage, I just, I'm a fucking dude. Like, come on, kind of have to.
It's a masculine thing.
It's a masculine art form.
It is.
You can't go up there and ask them for it. Femininity doesn't really
read.
No, it's not funny.
You know?
Not as funny. It's a different kind of funny. I mean, there's some people that are like, okay, here's a very funny feminine comic, Wendy Liebman. Very funny, very feminine.
Yeah.
Very, like, sort of, but clever writing, and but very feminine based.
That's true.
Well, here's my theory on this, okay? Society wants women to be agreeable, to say the right thing, and to make everybody feel comfortable. What's funny about that? Fucking nothing.
It's funny for me. I'm a man.
Lucky.
But you know what I mean? I think that's why female comedy sometimes fails. Because if you're playing into that norm, that social norm, then you're like, well, this just agrees with what a woman should be.
Get the right to vote? What year was that?
I would say
1930s or some shit?
The suffragettes.
Was it after that, right?
No, 30s. I know in 1974 a woman couldn't have a credit card unless her husband or her father allowed it.
That makes
sense. Was in 1974.
That makes sense.
Right, Tommy?
1913.
Okay. 1913 they could vote?
Yeah. Yeah, 1913.
I know that they couldn't run the Boston Marathon until sometime in the
70s. Get out of the way.
They couldn't run marathons in the 60s.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
That was just not that long ago.
Yeah, it's weird, right? It's weird that the woman's right to vote is literally 100 years old.
Yeah.
That's why we need to invest in time machines, right?
That's crazy. When you really stop and think about that, that's really crazy.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
But what you were saying about of having opinions, actually people don't expect me to have them. So when I do, then they're like, whoa, you little girl. Like I can get away with saying crazy foul shit.
Right.
And then they're like, look at her. Isn't she cute with her opinions and her thoughts, you know? So it can work to my advantage.
Yeah.
I can say shit that dudes can't sometimes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like in what way?
I won't threaten or challenge. Like, for instance, like, let's say you said something. I don't know. It's a good example.
Like a heckler or something, you mean?
Yeah, I can tell a guy, I will fucking shit down your throat if you do not shut the fuck up.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying.
He's not going to feel threatened.
Right.
Yeah, he'll be like, oh, that's so cute.
Right,
but if you were to say that guy might stand out and be like, really, Joe Rogan? Fuck you. And then you guys will fight.
I like how you use my full name.
Yeah, me too. That's good.
That's true. You could do it and there's a lot of funny in it. But Bobby Lee could do it too.
I could do it.
Yeah, you could do it too. You just have to not be physically threatening.
Years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
I make poopies down your throat.
Yeah. I want to do it.
I'd say 11. I don't think he's 7. I think 11. He's a brilliant 11-year-old.
11.
Guys, start driving slower. Don't scare Brian. All
there's all these Lamborghinis so that are just putting him in. On death's door.
200 down Sunset.
Cars are too fast, you guys. Fast.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
They totally blow like 5 lights in a row.
Zoom,
yeah,
all.
That's happening every day.
I like the apple juice.
Goddamn Lamborghini rolls. Avengers. They come flying in.
So cute. What do you like to eat? What's your favorite food?
Bugattis.
Pizza or hot dogs?
Steak and pizza.
Chicken nuggets.
Steak and
pizza. Are you thinking he's into childish food? That is stuff that you get at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. Hot dogs if they're sliced up for me.
I like steak a lot. There's this steakhouse in Burbank that I just went to called the Smokehouse. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's right across the street from Warner Brothers.
Good.
I know where it is. It's
old,
been there for
right?
65 years.
What's it
and
called?
Story, Smokehouse. And the story is about like how Bob Hope used to go there and how blah, 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 and all this shit happens. And I ordered a steak, and I swear to God, they pan-fried it. Like, it was a $30 steak, but they just put it in a pan. Have you ever had that where it just feels like, all right, this is not even
well,
like
some people prefer doing it on a pan, actually. Like Alton, what is that guy's name? Alton Eats, you know what I'm talking about? That guy?
Is that a 70s thing or something?
No. The apparently some people, there's different ways of cooking steak. Obviously, one of them is cooking it on an infrared grill or a coal grill or a gas grill.
Right.
You do it that way. But some people believe that the best way is to sear it on a cast iron pan. And then you cook it on a skillet, and then you put that skillet in the oven. You finish it off in the oven. I've done it that way before.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it as much as I like it over coal. over hardwood charcoal.
It kind of pissed me off. I felt like, wow, I just spent $30 on a good piece of meat. Like, it was a porterhouse.
You know? Right.
And that shit tastes like fucking Norm's. Nothing against Norm's, really? But like a $5 steak.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I felt like.
Nothing against Norm's and your $5 steak.
And you shit all over the $5 steak.
Norm's is
the... You know where I went?
You get a steak for $5. How can they even do that?
Shouldn't be allowed.
It's amazing. That place is amazing.
No way.
What does it look like before they cook it?
It's mafia meat, Joe Rogan. Yeah. It's mafia meat.
Have you been to Taylor's? Taylor's Steakhouse?
Where's that?
That's old school. It's from like the 50s. It's on 8th Street.
Oh, yeah?
Like, it's like you could tell it was there... Before the neighborhood was there.
What about Musso and Frank's? Ever been there?
Oh, yeah, I've never been there, but that's old school.
Right? That place is amazing. Yeah.
All this Musso food and Frank's
is amazing.
Good steak.
Make me hungry, son. Yeah. All right, this podcast, let's fucking call it over.
All right.
Should we call it over?
Yeah, man.
All right.
Look, you guys are the shit, as always. My favorite comedy couple in the history of comedy. How about that?
Thanks for having
win.
Us.
You guys win. You're number
Appreciate
one.
It.
Anytime. You guys are awesome. And I really think we should look into doing something like that. Have like one big network website where we're all together and have a link on our all
I love
our
it,
shit.
That's a good idea.
Thank you to everybody that tunes into this fucking poorly edited patched together, ridiculous conversation that takes way too long. We appreciate the fuck out of you. Thank you for all coming out to the shows, and thank you to everybody that's coming to Atlanta this weekend. I'm fucking fired up. I can't wait. Two shows. The first one is 8 o'clock, the second one's 10:30, and the first one sold out.
Hotlanta.
So come on down and have a good fucking time with me, Duncan Trussell, and the legendary Joey Coco Diaz.
Holla.
Thank you to The Fleshlight for sponsoring our podcast for, these many years. Go to joerogan.net, click on the link for The Fleshlight, and enter in the code name Rogan. Save yourself 15% off the number one sex toy for men. And I do believe that it's parallel thinking when they came up with a video of a guy stuffing a fleshlight in a chick's ass and then fucking the fleshlight. I really don't think anybody copied you, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong, Brian.
I was kidding.
Thanks to Onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain, Troom Tech Sport, Troom Tech Immune, and New Mood. All explained on Onnit.com. All of it, 10% off if you use the code name Rogan. And all of it when you buy the first sample bottle of, first bottle of 30 pills. There's 100% money back guarantee on the first order. You don't have to bring anything back. You just say it sucks and you get your money back. Holla. Kettlebells are coming. Everything's coming. We got a lot of cool new shit. Some crazy hemp protein powder that is unfucking believably delicious. It's hemp protein with raw cocoa, you know, raw chocolate that's like an antioxidant. Dark, delicious.
Good.
Oh, it's fucking
sounds really good.
Tastes so good.
Let's talk more
super
about
good
food.
For you. Yeah, food. Anyway, go to joerogan.net, click on the link for Alpha Brain, enter in the code name Rogan, save yourself 10% off, you dirty bitches. Thank you all. We appreciate you, we love you, and we're all connected. See you soon.
Boom.